But what we're seeing in the laboratory after people get these shots, we're seeing a very concerning locked-in low profile of these important killer T cells that you want in your body. It's almost a reverse HIV. In HIV, you lose your helper T cells, your CD4 cells. In this virus post-vaccine, what we're seeing is a drop in your killer T cells, your CD8 cells. And what did CD8 cells do? They keep all other viruses in check. What am I seeing in the laboratory? I'm seeing an uptick of herpes family viruses. I'm seeing herpes. I'm seeing shingles. I'm seeing mono. I'm seeing a huge uptick in human papillomavirus in the cervical biopsies and the cervical pap smears in women. In addition to that, there's a little infectious, you know, bump the kids get called molluscum contagiosum. What do you need to keep that in check? You need CD8 killer T cells. I am seeing a 20 times increase in individuals over the age of 50 of this little bump and rash. You know, that's innocuous, but what it tells me is the immune status of these individuals who have gotten the shot. We're literally weakening the immune system of these individuals. Now, most concerning of all is there's a pattern of these types of immune cells in the body that keep cancer in check. Well, since January 1 in the laboratory, I've seen a 20 times increase of endometrial cancers over what I see on an annual basis. A 20 times increase. I'm not exaggerating at all, because I look at my numbers year over year. I'm like, gosh, I've never seen this many endometrial cancers before. I'm seeing invasive melanomas in younger patients. Normally, we catch those early, and they're thin melanomas. I'm seeing thick melanomas skyrocketing in the last month or two. I'm already seeing the early signals, and we are modifying the immune system to a weakened state. Great study out of Germany that looked at these profiles on young individuals after the Pfizer, showing this locked in, and we don't know how long. Maybe the immune system, you know, is going to regenerate and those ratios will go back up. But who's studying it? And where are the long-term trials? 2 months, 4 months? How long is this profile locked in? We don't know.
Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to hack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Friday, September 24th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. I've got a fantastic show planned for you. The opening there was Dr. Ryan Cole. I would love to actually have him on the show. I've just been thinking about this the last couple of days. In fact, I've seen his work circulating for a while now. And if anybody has any connection out there to reach out to him, I would love to speak to him personally. He seems like he's got his head on straight, and he's even willing, as the clip we showed you, to say, well, you know, who knows? Maybe it'll go away. Maybe it won't. It seems like somebody who's being objective, and that's anybody out there doing that right now is somebody that you should be entertaining at the very least. Now today, of course, we're going to talk about, as you've seen the title, that the FDA, exactly like we predicted, exactly like a lot of people predicted, did what they wanted anyway. So did the CDC. Who cares what the experts we hired to tell us what to do told us to do? We're going to do what politics says we should do. Well, that's my take on it. But at the end of the day, they went a different direction. Now, yeah, that's not the first time that's happened, not even the last time that's going to happen. But it does show you an interesting deviation from what the experts say, trust the science, and going along with what they ultimately have already decided they were going to do. At least that's how it appears to me. Now, we're going to talk primarily about basically the FDA discussion and what that shows you in contrast with the data. We're also going to talk about a major study I was combining right there in regard to child vaccines, in regard to COVID-19. And what's most frustrating about how these things keep coming out is it's not some new breaking study that's challenging everything. It's another study that's coming out and going, I mean, literally the title of the study is, why are we vaccinating children for COVID-19? It's on Science Direct, a gigantic, well-respected scientific publication. And it's wild that it can say this. And in just the abstract alone, it lays out everything you need to know in regard to how this doesn't make sense. And then please read the full study, as always. But I'm just making the point that just in the small area, it says, this doesn't make sense. this actually is dangerous. And in fact, there's some data that it shows you that will not surprise you if you watch this show, but will shock some people that haven't heard this before. The increased risk, the dangerous nature of this in regard to children and in most people, in my opinion, if not all of them, if we actually fully understood what's going on in this thing, which it doesn't seem that we do. But as always, it's up to you to decide. I'm not telling anybody out there, don't go do this. I have my opinions. I'm saying you should have a choice. I'm saying this looks dangerous. This looks wrong. That looks deceptive. They're lying to you right here. I can prove it, but you should have the choice. And yet I'm the crazy one. I'm the one that's restricting people's rights and putting people into, no, that's not what's happening here. There's only one side of this argument that is saying you have to do this or you're going to be punished like we're children. You're going to be put in the corner. You're going to be slapped. You're going to lose your job. This is going to happen. We're going to force you. But you have a choice, though. Not really. Meanwhile, we're over here saying, as every individual, you know, which, by the way, continues to this day to align perfectly with bioethics, human rights all around the world, Helsinki Declaration, UNESCO, you name it, that you as the individual matter more than the collective society and science, that you have a choice. That's always been the case. We used to pretend that was the case, because we're all about what's right and moral and integrity until we go, oh, I'm scared of that thing. So those things don't matter anymore. Right. That seems like a sound way to go forward. But we're also going to talk about some hospital discussion today in regard to a specific location and how this reflects in a larger conversation about misinformation, about misunderstanding things, about taking things at face value from authority figures because you were told that makes you smart. That's the problem today. Plenty of people think they're doing their research when all they're really doing is looking for an authority to tell them what the right thing to think is. Source material is what matters. And you know that. That's why you're here today. Doesn't mean I can't be wrong. Doesn't mean I can't be wrong. Double negatives get tricky sometimes. But it ultimately means that anybody can make mistakes. Anybody can end up trusting the wrong people. Right? I mean, there's experts out there. At some level, you have to ultimately go to an expert. That's the same thing we're talking about today. Because we don't know everything. I don't know every topic we're talking about. I research it. I do my due diligence. But at the end of the day, you have to go, well, this is what some of the experts say, which is the point, which is why we ultimately come to a lot of ends where we go, I don't know. And that's okay. The problem today is that everybody has to have the answer. It's like they look for people that literally go, this is the answer, whether that's independent media, whether that's the experts in the mainstream media. The problem is that none of that is really the smart way to go if you are just trusting what someone says. You can take an expert opinion, but blindly trusting anything today seems like a really dangerous path forward. And what's funny is, as much as that is very logical, and by the way, rooted with everything else we used to use in our, you know, scientific method and a lot of different things we discuss, that is deemed ridiculous today by people in the mainstream that want you to blindly follow what they tell you is the truth. Trust the science becomes trust what we tell you the science is. And I've been saying that from the very beginning. Now, sorry for that. I wanted to get that out in the beginning. But the ultimate point here is we're going to go through, as always, and break this stuff down and show you, give you the tools to look at this stuff for yourself. In fact, I even called the hospital myself and I'll play what they said, which seems to, at the very least, open up some concern about things that are dishonest, things that seem to be intentionally opaque around times when that should be the opposite. Now, I want to start off with a couple of quick points here. I'm being told from a couple of different directions right now that certain platforms aren't working. What's new, guys? I apologize for that. I don't know which ones you're talking about, but let's just keep going forward. I want to start off with a couple of different points from foreign policy, as well as a few other things as usual from the beginning here. This I found very interesting for a lot of reasons. Bitcoin crashes, which by the way, just kind of came back up as it always does. It's always like, oh, it just crashed. And then it comes basically back up to the same point a few hours, a day later. And that doesn't get reported as it just broke through the roof, right? It's just weird how it's always the crash and never the equilibrium. You know, anyway, the point is, it seems like it's always the negative around this discussion. Now, there's a lot of reason to be very concerned around blockchain technology and how it's being utilized. World Economic Forum, Great Reset, always. I've been talking about that long before this weird schism between the discussion here, the blockchain community. Long before this ever came about, I've been very concerned about how this was going forward. But I've always maintained, as anybody intelligent should, that there's tools that can be used both ways, especially when it comes to fighting back, things like that. But the point here is that it's interesting to see China. As the bottom line is, China basically deemed all crypto-related transactions illegal, which then crashed the market, or so they say, so we're told. There was a dip. But what's interesting is if this is the mindset that the blockchain technology is what this is all about, even from the mindset that China's the only bad guy out there, this doesn't really align And maybe it's a, you know, secret move to make you think they're not going along with it. I don't know. They are using, as many of these groups are, their own digital currency. But then the argument becomes, as always, that Bitcoin is the focus and that's the Fed coin. And there's a lot of subjective, and usually it comes from misunderstanding about what these things really are and what blockchain versus Bitcoin is. And I recommend James Corbett's work there. Nonetheless, I found this an interesting move. Maybe it's because they're trying to drive you into their specific cryptocurrencies that they are using. Concerning, right? Anyway, I thought this was nonetheless interesting. I'll probably circle back as this develops more and see where this goes. Now, on to some foreign policy. Somebody sent this to me, and thank you for that. This is an upsetting conversation that I have, and I still will, but for a long time before COVID-19 was one of my biggest focuses. In fact, the very first interview, I believe, was Whitney's first interview on video a long time ago. And one of my first interviews with her, or was the first with her, was when we discussed Yemen. She did a great article for Mint Press News, and I reached out and I said, hey, this is some great work you're doing. I'd love to have you on the show. And we talked about Yemen. It's been a nonstop conversation of just absolute catastrophe, human suffering, starvation. And you know what is causing all of it? Your government and their actions, their continual actions that put human life on the back burner for their agendas. Saudi Arabia has openly been continuing to bomb and murder and attack people directly, bombing food sources, bombing civilians. This is not a secret. Plenty of the organizations around the world, the UN, Human Rights Watch, all of them have been calling it out. Your government's completely involved. In fact, they're driving this agenda. And this has been going on for a decade, more. And now yet again, in the middle of all of this, I mean, it's even taking their narrative at face value, which you shouldn't, that we're in the middle of a big pandemic. Well, that's even worse. And it continues anyway. It's amazing how these things don't get brought up by the mainstream media, right? The head of the UN Food Agency is warning again for what, the 18th year in a row, that the 16 million people in Yemen are marching toward starvation. Same old story. How sad is that? David Beasley said at the meeting on Yemen's humanitarian crisis that food rations in the nation will be cut in October unless new funding arrives. Well, guess what would work instead of continuing to send food to a nation that you're starving as if that makes you a good person? Get the hell out of there. All right. How about you remove the fake puppet they're trying to force into place, which is why this is all starting, why this all started. Hadi, the Saudi puppet, the U.S. puppet that they forced out, that the Houthis forced out because the people don't want him there. That's why he's currently running out of Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, and just allow the Houthis and the Yemeni people to go back to their lives. You see, that would be unacceptable to the political sphere. So they'll continue to starve these people until they get what they want and pretend that it's anybody else's fault but their own. This is what your leaders do today. This is what we need to understand. And don't think for a moment that this doesn't translate over into what they're doing to you right now, wherever you are in the world. Disgusting. Now, Caitlin Johnstone made a great point on this morning. Yesterday. She said, I've had numerous people, including a few of some influence, tell me I shouldn't still be writing about Western imperialism and other pre-2020 concerns at all and should focus exclusively on government COVID responses. And that, to me, sounds like something a Fed would say. Now, I argue that that's true, but there's also probably people that just are so clearly aware of how serious this is and they're right, that they're a little bit overcompensating to the point of saying, you know, just ignore everything else and focus on this. But what they're missing there is that all that other stuff that she's writing about is equally is involved in this. This is a worldwide effort here. So I'm glad she said this. And maybe it is partially that there are people now that are trying to hide what's happening in Syria and other locations that are right now going crazy that no one's talking about because we're so consumed with COVID-19. And as I said, we absolutely should not lose our focus on foreign policy, as it is as equally tied in to all of this as the domestic COVID restrictions. This is truly a global agenda. We have to see that by now. Build back better, right? Across every single location, every leader's lips, and across a 3-week period. Total coincidence, though, right? And as Ron Falcone writes, which I found very interesting, I see a lot shifting right now. Even people that have historically been like aggressively tied into the two-party paradigm are beginning to say things like this. And this is interesting because I think COVID-19 has broken a lot of things that they didn't expect it to break. As he says, I was wrong about Tulsi Gabbard. I was wrong about Bernie, the squad, AOC. I was wrong to think our electoral system could be somehow the solution. Wow, that's a big revelation right there. I now know it never will be. This is somebody that has been so invested, and not, I'm not trying to make fun of anybody. Everybody, it's not wrong to believe you can try to work within the system to try to make good things happen. I just think it's naive with what we actually know today, but maybe people don't see the full picture as we, but maybe I'm wrong too. But my point is that he is now seeing what I'm seeing. The electoral system is not, it never will be. It's designed, in my opinion, to not be there. It is a bunch of levers in place that they can move anytime they want to make the outcome be what they want or manipulate what they want to happen. Guys, it's been set up this way for decades. You can point to the broken voting machines and how people have testified that they've cheated and lied and nothing ever happens. They use the same machines next year, on and on. That has nothing to do with 2016. That's long before that. I've been covering this long before the whole 2016 Diebold machine conversation. I wrote articles about that before that came around. You are being fooled if you believe this system will produce what you think you're voting for. It is an illusion. And finally, people are beginning to see it. And I think it's because of other things that are happening. As I said, great to see you saying this, Ron. Until we see beyond the false two-party dichotomy, we will remain stuck in place. By design, the only thing that can stop what is happening, be that imperialist foreign policy or medical tyranny, one and the same, if you're paying attention, is us. We need to stop it. As Corbett said, this will stop when we stop it. And finally, another interesting point, the editor, senior editor of The Blaze, right? Cutting edge, independent, mainstream, right? Sort of trying to be independent media, but not, right? And it's interesting as he says, what the hell is Pfizer saying on page 67? Oh, you mean that thing that you've seen for 8 months, 10 months? I mean, I'm glad it's being pointed out. I just think it's funny that these people, where have they been? Are they only now coming out with this information that we've all been screaming about because it's somewhat safe to do it now? Or are they actually just seeing it for the first time? And this means they are aggressively avoiding anything that's in the independent media. How is that even possible? With everything that's been shown to be correct, it shows you that there's a level of just ignorance, willful ignorance around what they deem to be not acceptable source material because the mainstream dictates what's conspiracy theory. So you, if that's the case, I'm just laying out a hypothetical, are being played by the mainstream media if you're allowing that to happen, whoever that would be. So here is this person saying that you can be exposed to someone's spike protein shedding via inhalation. Would sure explain how that got that basically how this all got worse now. Yeah, you don't say. A spike protein, like the Salk Institute points out, can spread, like Dr. Warren points out, can shed, that it can be caught, that it can spread disease. Yep, that's been there for months, bud, and we've been talking about it for a long time. And I think it's incredible that these people are not seeing it until it gets pushed in front of them by other people in their sphere of mainstream. And this is becoming sort of acceptable to point out. I mean, there's been some pretty reasonably mainstream groups that have actually talked about this. I'm not even trying to call anybody out. I don't understand the disconnect. I don't understand how this stuff, such prominent information, literally on Pfizer's own documentation, can just not be seen until now, even though there's people like us and people far bigger than me that have been waving this around. I just don't know how that can't be a willful choice. I'll leave it there. That's crazy to me. But you know what? It's still a good thing, regardless of the motives or being Johnny come lately on that note. Or actually, excuse me, I thought I had a good segue there, but there's another point. You'll see what I mean when I get to it. Before I get to that, here's another interesting point that COVID-1984 shared. Fauci warning for what, like the seventh time in this process about a dark winter coming. I mean, really, people? Build Back Better is the most obvious, ridiculous one that we don't want to, but that Biden can actually pretend that there's nothing there. That was just a coincidence. I just did Build Back Better because we're building back the country. Oh, and then literally every other government says Build Back Better. Oh, and then the Great Reset uses Build Back Better as their tagline. Totally not connected, though. Like, they really think you're that stupid, right? And here's what's crazy is that they can use the term dark winter over and over and over throughout this process and act like we're too stupid to put together what that actually points to. Dark winter, which is an actual exercise around pandemic preparing. This is crazy stuff. Whitney Webb wrote about this. We've done interviews about this. If you're interested, I've included the link itself to the article. All roads lead to dark winter, April 1st, 2020. Very important information here, guys, that gets into what was really going on before all of this in regard to a lot of different things, including anthrax, which is what these images are from. And the reference to it today is not by accident, guys. Take a listen to what he says.
We don't get the people vaccinated who need to be vaccinated, and we get that conflating with an influenza season, we could have a dark, bad winter.
A dark, bad winter. Right. You know, the conflating with that flu season that doesn't exist anymore, that vanished last year, but now is going to be a problem. Right. So either what we're doing is affecting the flu or it's not. Right. So if it just comes back rampantly this next year and everyone's being forced to do the same things, that'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy, won't it? Now, on top of that, if it suddenly again doesn't come back, well, we know where it's going, guys. And it's funny how they can twice in a row predict that flu will combine and we're going to have this super thing. It's almost like they're telling you what's happening. Yeah, I think that's what happened. They just don't tell you that the second time when they go, yeah, they're going to combine. It's going to be a super pandemic. And then it's all COVID. Flu disappeared. Okay. Maybe they did tell you exactly what did happen. Same thing here. I try to be as objective as possible here, but the reality that the flu vanished around a time when they're clearly combining flu and pneumonia and COVID-19, and they're using tests that test anything anywhere and give you a high false positive with the numbers they're using, which I will reiterate again, is just ridiculous. But read this for yourself if you want to understand the full picture. We've had Rick Bright say it. We've had everybody Biden has said it. We've had people continue to reiterate the dark winter. We had Robert Cadleck, Mr. Infamous himself. I mean, it's crazy how continually they tell you, oh, dark winter's coming. Please read this article. It's very important, along with every other work that Whitney has done on this website, which is outstanding. Now, to bring this to the first part of this, which is so incredibly important, this is not just about how high these numbers are and how obviously they continue to ignore this. This is about a child study specifically around injections that shows you that it's common knowledge this doesn't make sense and it's happening anyway. Sort of exactly like natural immunity that everyone's ignoring. The 13 gigantic elephants in the room that you could point to, the PCR test, all of these things, they're clearly a problem. You know, overall mortality. Oh, don't look at that one. Don't look at this one here. Don't look at the natural immunity that completely overshadows everything. Don't look at any of those things. Just listen to the narrative. Trust the science. More than 726,000 COVID vaccine injuries reported to Bayer's as CDC FDA overrule advisory committee's recommendations on third Pfizer shot. Nobody can actually argue why they're ignoring all of these reports other than to kind of like opaquely argue that they're not verified, which underhandedly means they don't mean anything, but they haven't verified them. So how can you then argue that they don't mean anything? Like, you understand that they're admitting that they haven't verified all these. When they say unverified, that means they have not looked into them. Yet that also means, as we keep seeing, that they're not real. How is that possible? It's just the same as saying that we know benefits outweigh the risks, except we don't actually know the full risk because it hasn't gotten there yet. And we still don't know the full benefits because we haven't gotten there yet. But yeah, we'll pretend that's the case. It says data released September 17th by the CDC showed that between December 14, 2020 and September 17th, 2021, a total of 726,965 adverse events following COVID vaccines were reported to VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, co-managed by the CDC and the FDA. The data included a total of 15,386 reports of deaths, an increase of 461 over the previous week. Now, here's why these numbers keep getting confused, even for me. There were 99,410 reports of serious injury, including death, almost 100,000 reports of serious injury during that same time period, up almost 8,000 compared to the previous week. Now, gee, what has increased over that time period? Oh, that's right. More injections, right? It says excluding foreign reports. And here's the number, the contrast between the 15,000 deaths, excluding what they're calling foreign reports, which is so many little caveats like that. Like when they had the trials, when there was a huge number of people that just got pushed out after the first shot and they didn't get included in the overall number. And you later find out because they had a wildly severe reaction early on. And they just like, well, it could have been something else. So we push them out right in the beginning. That's so dishonest. But it says here, excluding those foreign reports filed in VAERS, 569,294 adverse events, including 6,981 deaths and 44,481 serious injuries reported in the U.S. between December 14, 2020, September 17, 2021. So when you include those foreign reports, which I'd love to find out what those actually, why they're being considered something outside, they should include it as far as I'm concerned, if it's a death, which is why they're reporting 15,000. But it says of the 6,981 U.S. deaths reported as of September 17th, 12% occurred within 24 hours, 17% occurred within 48 hours of the injection, 30% occurred in people who experienced an onset of symptoms within 48 hours of being injected. Now, why that's important? multiple studies have already come out and pointed this out. We are talking about a situation where people are getting injected. And remember, I'll make this point again in a second. The CDC's own documentation makes it clear that you are considered unvaccinated until you pass 14 days after that second injection. And then, by the way, you're not vaccinated again after 3 months, but they're keeping the lid on this. And I still have this saved. This is something, this is from the St. Louis government, and this was on multiple locations, but I was only able to archive this one. Where was it? Right here, where it says, after 3 months of the last dose, you're no longer considered to be fully vaccinated. They scrubbed this since then. But this was this is very clear, and it's already been shown on documentation in regard to how they're deeming somebody vaccinated in a hospitalized situation. It's important that we don't forget that. Now, going back to the point, if you have 12% of people of these deaths being reported occurred 24 hours, 17 within 48 hours. And then, of course, you add 30% in the 48 hours of symptoms. And the real data, when you dig into this, I showed you on the actual study and a report that went over this, almost 50% of these deaths are happening in time frames where they're going to be considered unvaccinated by the CDC. So this is why an easy way right in the beginning to point out why when they go, oh, most of these people are unvaccinated. Well, are they? In my opinion, if they've got one shot, that's vaccinated. You've got something in your blood that is causing problems or can, based on their own admissions, blood clots, Bell's palsy, myocarditis, on and on and on. So you have something in your body. You have a foreign substance in your body, and then something happens, and you're going to pretend like that doesn't play a factor or could. You don't just deem them unvaccinated because they're not what you've decided is the definition of fully vaccinated. That's how they keep changing things. Vaccine, herd immunity. They keep changing these definitions based on what suits what they're doing. There's no way other than to write that and then dishonest. That's deceptive. You don't change a definition unless you're doing it to for a very clear reason. Now, the point here is that that needs to be remembered as we go forward, that if 50% or more, especially even plenty more when you're considering that these onset of symptoms began within 48 hours, and then there's a 2-week period there where they're not considered, I guess it would be another 12-day period where they're considered not vaccinated, even after both shots. That's just incredible to me. So we're talking like a month and a half period here. Wait, it would be, so you get one shot, you got 2 weeks, and you get another shot, there's 2 weeks. So a little over a month while being injected where things can happen that then you're deemed unvaccinated. It's just like the PCR test and everything else. There's a huge caveat, intentionally so I would argue, into what they're showing you as a number. Whether it's deaths around COVID, whether it's unvaccinated in the hospitals, it doesn't add up. Because it's obvious that it could go or could be subjective based on a lot of factors. Now, the next point here, before we go forward, that's going to come back into play. I just wanted to reiterate that it's important. But this, before we get to that next part, is really concerning to me. And this is regard to the child study. I actually only saw this on this article. Now, this is, first of all, discussing, it says the CDC overrules agency's own vaccine safety committee and sides with the FDA on boosters. All right, so we watched this happen. We watched the FDA have their committee, you know, the committee they were supposed to have before the ridiculous quasi-approval, and decided not to because there's no reason to have any. There's no more danger. Oh, but suddenly now we're seeing danger. Isn't that funny? How before their rationalization was that there's no signals of problems, so we don't need the committee. And then weeks later, they have the committee and there's all sorts of problems. Gee, that wasn't coordinated. The point is that they asked the committee. The committee came out. They voted. They said no. And the reason they voted no, in my opinion, is because experts came on the open panel and said, these are dangerous. Here's why. And they went, as I told you they would, in their own direction anyway. So it's as silly as saying, we're going to have a panel of experts to tell us the right thing to do. And then we're going to ignore what they say and decide what we wanted to do anyway. So why do you even ask their opinion? And they're going to vote so clearly on one side of this. And then go against them. It says, in an unusual move, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, CDC director, you know, the one who got caught lying in two different ways about breakthrough cases, covering up 100,000 of them, according to Bloomberg, as well as using a time period knowing where most of people were unvaccinated to represent a time when most people were vaccinated and pretend, well, they're all unvaccinated in the hospitals, except you took that from 6 months ago. Total lie. And they got caught for that. And still they pretend this number. I mean, this is the crazy part about having to debunk some of the articles we're going to talk about next, even though we've already literally caught them lying. The people that pretend that we're somehow misinforming people pretend like that's not the case, despite it being it's very simple. They took a 6-month period from the beginning of the year and took the data from that at a time when most people were unvaccinated and said that represented the time we're in now. And saying right now, most people in the hospitals are unvaccinated because of this study. That study was pointing to a while ago. There's no way that's not dishonest. At the very least, you can say the data from this part of the year suggests this is where we are. That's not what they did. They argued that was the current data. They lied to you. And yet we're somehow misinforming people by telling you that that's not the case. Or at the very least, as I've been doing, that there's a caveat here, that they're clearly, it's the same as like the discussions we've had before. If the central data that's being used to formulate these arguments is a lie, is shown to be inaccurate from the wrong time period, you can't keep standing on that argument going forward with new studies. You are starting from a false place. But you see, this is fake news to anybody who doesn't want to hear it. It says on Thursday, they overruled her agency's vaccine advisory committee, their recommendation to limit Pfizer's COVID booster shots for people 65 and older, long-term care facility residents, and certain people with underlying conditions. Instead, Walensky aligned with the FDA, the authorization of a third dose of Pfizer's vaccine for a broader population, including healthcare workers, grocery store workers, teachers, and others whose jobs put them at high risk of infection. Or not at all, in fact, if you look at their actual risk according to the Oxford calculator. But we're still running under this false assumption because they keep telling you, the experts, that you're all in danger, you're all going to die, biggest pandemic of the century, while they take a very high number from a very small part of the population and even it out across everybody. Because that's totally normal, right? Kids are at zero risk. You're 19 and under, you literally have a 1 in a million risk. If you're 40 and under, you have a dramatically less risk than the flu if you have no comorbidities. This is all on their data they've showed you from the Oxford, calculator, as well as the only study I can find of a infection, the meta-analysis of 113 infection fatality rate studies. And they tell you yet again, under 20, dramatically less than the flu. I've shown you all of these. So how can you then argue that a grocery store worker or a teacher, by definition, are at high risk, therefore need this when they're at zero risk, according to the calculator we've shown you? In multiple categories. Anyway, it just gets ridiculous, doesn't it? Because all that gets dismissed because the authority said so. And that's the intelligent thing to do, apparently. Plus residents of prisons and homeless shelters. Now it says President Biden today acted on the news. Again, just like we told you. So Biden comes out before the experts and says, we're going to get the boosters. A lot of intelligent experts out there got really upset about that and said, well, you're not even waiting for the scientists. Well, gee, he seemed to know, didn't he? Because the scientists said no, and they did it anyway, and he turned out to be right. So did Biden let the cat out of the bag? Did Biden and the group decide before the experts even got a time to pretend that they were doing something? I mean, come on. It's so clear that Biden said what they were going to do, and they did what they were going to do, regardless of what the panel said. I mean, come on, guys. It's happening. And he just went forward with it anyway. He acted on the news that they decided not to listen to the experts, but trust the science, though, right? The CDC's vaccine advisory panel in a meeting Thursday voted unanimously to approve booster doses of Pfizer's COVID vaccine for people 65 and older, long-term care facility residents, and certain people with underlying conditions. The booster dose will be given at least 6 months after being fully vaccinated. Great. So you have 3 months and then you get to have a booster. That's fantastic. Just like in Israel, guys, it's already happening and Israel already admitted you are no longer fully vaccinated after a certain period after one of these doses. They said the third and the fourth. Which implies that after the fourth, you will again need a fifth. They laid it all out for you. It's a never-ending booster continuation. Just by the way, like we told you, was likely going to happen. Now it says the FDA on Wednesday amended the emergency use authorization. Right, that thing that they're still using based on the illusion that we're in some kind of an emergency, despite the fact that the vast majority of the population is not at risk from this. Even the variants, even the information they keep telling you is happening, as their data makes clear. But I'm a conspiracy theorist for saying that, I guess, apparently. It says COVID vaccines to allow a single booster shot to be administered to people 65 and older. They altered the emergency authorization, you know, for the safe and effective thing. But if it's safe and effective, it should be approved. That's what the terms mean. Emergency authorization, by definition, means we do not know if it's safe and effective. And that's exactly what their information says. Just because they keep saying something different doesn't change that it's currently still on all of their websites. An approved drug has been verified to be safe. Of course, that doesn't even ultimately mean that according to our history, but that's what they say it does. Emergency use shows you that they're rationalizing. It says, well, we don't know the full safety profile. It's right in the beginning, but we believe that what we do know outweighs the risk we can see. Therefore, we don't know the full risks or the full benefits. I mean, it's plain. But it says, in addition to older Americans, the FDA authorized boosters for, guess what, guys? People 18 years old through 64. if they're at high risk, of course, of severe illness from COVID. Now, that's because the situational. Oh, well, you're in this dangerous area. You see how this is going to work? They're going to argue that people are high risk because everyone's at high risk. Literally, they're going to say, well, we see high cases today. You're at high risk. So now you should get a booster. And how much you want to bet that because they've already opened this door, that lots of doctors who have already been kind of ignoring these anyway, giving it to younger children because it's safe and effective, or giving it to people that have a need a third one, even though they shouldn't be getting it because it's not approved. Oh, it's just safe and effective. Well, that's what's going to happen, guys. They're going to start giving it to people who come in 19 years old and say, well, I want a booster. Oh, okay, come on in. You think that's wrong? It's already been happening. And people have already rationalized that as the right thing to do. Like as if they know better than the FDA that they keep telling us to listen to, right? I mean, it's incredible how subjective it all is when you stand back and look at it. We're fake news for not listening to the FDA. Then the FDA says not to do it and they want to get it anyway and the doctors give it to them because, well, we know better. How does that even make sense? Who's trusting science, right? But it says, and also those frequently whose frequent institutional or occupational exposure to the virus puts them at high risk of serious complication from the disease caused by the virus. This applies to pretty much anyone they wanted to, because the high risk is subjective based on, as they even admit, circumstantial factors like being in certain areas with certain cases, lots of, you know, your contact trace, or on and on and on. It says Dr. Peter Marks, director of the FDA's Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, said the agency considered the committee's input, but conducted its own review of the data in reaching a decision. Great. So why did you ask the experts? I know this happened before. I'm just making point here that these are the, at a time when they've never, I mean, never in my life have heard more to trust the experts, trust the science. And you bring in a panel of like the experts, they're telling you the people we should be listening to. And they show you this is dangerous. They vote. It's dangerous. They vote in the in regard. I'm oversimplifying it, by the way. They didn't vote all said and done. They did vote for the 65 and over and on and on. I made this clear in my last show. Nonetheless, they ultimately voted not to do what they're now doing. That's pretty clear. It says during the public comment session, this is what I've already shown you, numerous experts said the data supporting Pfizer's request for booster doses was inadequate. Several people, as we showed you, highlighted concerning patterns with the data from Bayer's, requesting more attention to be given to potential signals and reports of adverse events. Dr. Jessica Rose, one of the most important ones we showed you, a viral immunologist and virologist, said there are clear risk signals emerging from Bayer's data with a 1,000% increase in the total number of adverse events for just 2021. And again, as they admit, they're unverified, meaning they don't care. Like they literally don't care to even look into them to find out whether or not they're real. They've already decided they're fake news. Next part, physician horribly injured after Pfizer's vaccine pleads with U.S. agencies for help. Please read this whole article, by the way. This is a jam-packed article. Now it says, in an exclusive interview with The Defender, Dennis Hertz, a 64-year-old physician who is, quote, horribly ill and incapacitated after getting Pfizer's COVID vaccine, claims U.S. health agencies are ignoring thousands of adverse events. It's not a claim. They absolutely are. And this is a doctor telling you what's this, you know, it's just one and yet another doctor. It's just so funny how subjective it is. Well, if the doctor says something that we disagree with, well, now she's a dangerous conspiracy theorist, fake news. But if this doctor says what we're supposed to hear, well, then they're someone we should listen to. Do you realize it has nothing to do with the credentials? It has to do with you choosing a narrative, right? I mean, someone could be debunked because they say the wrong things. And look, they said this back when they were 30. You know, it's subjective. It's ridiculous. Look at the data. They get dismissed for saying the wrong thing. Hertz told The Defender there are thousands of people like her, injured by COVID vaccines, who are suffering and need help. Yet they're ignored by mainstream media and U.S. health agencies. This has been proven. There have been people that are, I've shown you the videos of the mom. There's been at least three or four people that we have verified on this show that have absolutely suffered some kind of problem. I'm not saying I'm proving that it's tied to the vaccine, but they took the shot. Their daughter took the shot and within a day was crippled and has never recovered. Is in a wheelchair to this day. You've probably seen the video. They reported it. To this day, has never even heard back. You're telling me some that we know these are all fake news, but this girl can have a possibly life threatening, which is where she currently is, but is now completely incapacitated in a wheelchair a very short period after this happening, and we can report it. They don't even get a phone call, they don't get a follow up, and yet we're all fake news. 30,000 women in the UK report menstrual problems after the COVID shots. Yep, that you could say it's unverified because nobody's chosen to look into it. Meanwhile, we're acting like it's a conspiracy theory to argue there's any concern around reproductivity, around the menstrual discussion. How can it be conspiracy theory if nobody's chosen to look into it? It's wild where we are right now. Here's the main point that I wanted to finish on. New study questions, not finish the show, but finish this segment. New study questions need for vaccinating children against COVID. Now, what's crazy to me is that I have to see this at the bottom of a Defender article to find out about this. This is the kind of thing that should be breaking news. But they'll never show you this from a huge publication like Science Direct, because it challenges the narrative. Now, so do you think the media is doing doing the discussion justice by hiding part of the story? That's not journalism, guys. That's propaganda. They'll rush out of the gate with any study that backs up what they already think. As the Defender reported this week, a new study published in Science Direct questioned the need for vaccinating children against COVID. The study found the bulk of official COVID-attributed deaths per capita occurred mostly in the elderly with high comorbidities, while COVID-attributed deaths were negligible in children. Now, there's far more important stuff in this study we're going to show you right here. Look at this is the title of the study. Why are we vaccinating children against COVID-19? Yeah, it's a good question. There's really no good answer other than some agenda that we're not seeing. Now, this is a recent study. This is from, I think, last month or this. I saw it just a moment ago. Let's see right here. Here we go. So it's July, in fact, which is absolutely. Oh, here we go. That's why. So it's available as of September 14th. But here's what blows me away. This is what I'm always showing people. If this was out there July 16th, because it was received or accepted, usually there's a preprint. It's out there. Nobody's talking about it. I can't see it. Like, I search for this stuff all the time. They don't pop up in Google searches. Why? Because they don't want you to see it. It should be. I literally will search for studies around children vaccinating COVID-19. Nothing. All you get is their data from mainstream media because that's how they control the search results. And they're open about that today. They're downranking what they call misinformation. So it's even misinformation when it comes from The Lancet or from Science Direct. They're not saying that, but they downrank it so you can't see it. Now, here's what this says. This article examines issues related to COVID-19 inoculations for children. The bulk of the official COVID-19 attributed deaths per capita occurred in the elderly with high comorbidities. Now, we've already told you all this. We're going to get into a fantastic article from Off Guardian today, which is the bulk of the show, to make a lot of these points. Things we've already shown you, but I think it's such a great article. It's almost like I'm jealous they did this before me. I just have no time to get such a all-encompassing data compilation done. Off Guardian, they've been killing it lately, from the beginning of all this. But continuing forward, the bulk of the COVID vaccines attributed to death per capita occurred in elderly with high comorbidities. And the COVID-19 attributed deaths per capita are negligible in children. You know all this because you've been watching the show, because you look at the data. Now, actually, let me pause real quick. Then pick up right there, make this point, because I don't want to be disjointed about it next. I've already shown you this, and I think it's incredible. And they've already also put it on a paywall, even though it wasn't before, which is for a reason, and I'll show you why. Here's the article I've read to you many times. The flimsy evidence behind CDC's push to vaccinate children. This is the Wall Street Journal. It says, a tremendous number of government and private policies affecting kids are based on one number, 335. Now, they claim that's up to 400 now. That is how many children under 18 have died with COVID diagnosis. They haven't died from COVID. They died with a COVID diagnosis code in their record, according to the CDC. Yet the CDC, which has 21,000 employees, has not researched each death to find out whether COVID caused it or if it's involved in a pre-existing medical condition. Without these data, the CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices decided in May that the benefits of two-dose vaccination outweigh the risk for all kids 12 to 15. As he says, I've written hundreds of peer-reviewed medical studies. I can think of no journal editor who would accept the claim that 335 deaths resulted from a virus without data to indicate if the virus was incidental or causal and without analysis of relevant risk factors such as obesity. They did not research these. They took at face value that the kids died from COVID because they went down with the COVID code in the hospital. Even the Wall Street Journal can point out that they're just taking it at face value because it suits what they're doing. But let's just say sake of conversation, that 400 kids dying from this was true. Are we really going to pretend like that is enough to argue they should all be injected with something that clearly increases their risk of myocarditis to a dramatic degree? They've admitted this already. Or any number of other things. Bottom line, though, is they haven't proven this. And the reality is showing that these kids are at one in a million, even better. So making that point clear, negligible is a nice way to put that. But yet another study is making that clear. The bulk of the normalized post-inoculation deaths, so after dying after injection, the bulk of those after the post-inoculation deaths also occur in the elderly with high comorbidities. It's just interesting that's being stated so clearly. While the normalized post-inoculation deaths are small but not negligible in children. So people are dying after these injections. Even Science Direct can make that clear. Clinical trials for these inoculations were very short term, a few months. Yet another thing we keep saying that people keep acting is like fake news. No, they've been studying this for 1,000 years, and that's the most safe, longest safety trials in the history of humanity. Nope. They've been studying this before this and been failing over and over and over. And that never, regardless of how long you've been studying a concept, changes the length of the safety trials of a new vaccine. But who cares? It's all fake news, right? But it says clinical trials for these injections that they're currently giving to children or trying to were a few months. Had samples not representative of the total population. We've talked about all this. And for adolescents and children, had poor predictive power because of their small size. But we're somehow arguing that it's safe and effective, and we all know that, and we're going to force it. We're literally forcing people to take it or they lose their jobs. Further, the clinical trials did not address change in biomarkers that could serve as early warning indicators of elevated predisposition to serious diseases. Who cares about all that, right? Who cares if whether we can look into what we've done in any other situation and be able to tell, hey, well, this would suggest this could cause this, like we just showed you on a different study that clearly said, look, these factors can pretty clearly predict whether or not this injection could actually be far more damaging to somebody. Why aren't we using those? That's the same point, because they don't care, or they're incompetent. I don't know. They're not doing it, though. It says, most importantly, the clinical trials did not address long-term effects. Isn't it funny how all these things are directly challenging all the Twitter experts out there? These are the science. This is one of the most highly regarded science publications that is telling you without question, because it's very clear that these things are the facts. It was a short trial. They didn't do it properly. They had small powered size, or they predicted power was low because of their small size. They didn't look for the early indicators to dictate whether you were going to have a problem here. And they did not address long-term effects because it says if serious would be borne in children and adolescents for potential. It says most importantly, the clinical trials did not address long-term effects that if serious would be borne by clinical adolescents for potential decades. It's weird. I think it's in this next part. The point was, I thought that second part of that sentence was following up with what I said. They didn't address long-term effects, which means they don't know. The argument that we know about long haul of anything or long-term effects of these injections is such an obvious deception, and all these people can point it out. But I'll be debunked by a fact checker for saying this. It says, a novel best case scenario cost-benefit analysis showed very conservatively that there are 5 times the number of deaths attributable to each injection versus those attributable to COVID-19 in most vulnerable 65 plus demographic. Now you tell me if I'm somehow misunderstanding what that's saying. Their cost-benefit analysis showed there are 5 times the number of deaths attributable to each inoculation, the injections, versus those attributable to COVID-19 in the most vulnerable. How is that not the headline? Clearly they're taking this from Bayer's, which that's how this is going to be dismissed. But think about how crazy that is. 5 times the number of deaths attributable to the injections versus those attributable to the very thing they're telling you you're supposed to take that injection for in the very demographic that's at most risk. What? Gee, I wonder why this isn't being talked about in the mainstream media. The risk of death from COVID-19 decreases drastically as age decreases. Yeah, we know that. They don't care about that, though. They just give you the average and pretend like we're all in danger. And the longer-term effects of the injections on lower age groups, like children, will increase their risk-benefit ratio, perhaps substantially. You know why they say perhaps? Because we don't know. Unreal. It's unreal that we are the crazy ones while we point to stuff like this. It's just baffling to me how people can still go along with this. I'm not saying this proves everything we've always done. My point is, this is very clear evidence that the narrative being spun is simply based on narrative. It is not based on the facts. They are telling you what's happening. Right now, they're trying to justify injecting the children. This is science coming out and saying, why the hell are we doing that? And yet it keeps going forward. Should blow your mind. I really think there's so much stuff like this out there, and yet it just keeps being dismissed by people that don't want to see it. That's one huge study that I think is going to be dismissed. But keeping this in mind, let's go over to one point first, and then the Off Guardian article about the cheat sheet. This is basically what I was kind of wanting to do. And I'm glad they did this because they did a great job on it of breaking down what they argue are the most important points. There's one that I actually disagree with, and I'll make a point on it. And in their defense, they kind of circle back and make that argument, but I'll show you what I mean. Before we get there, I want to make a point that James Corbett just made, and excellent. He gave me a shout out in this, which I'm always happy to hear because I'm such a, you know, great big fan of James Corbett as always, and James Evan Pilato. They're such, you know, they're OGs in this sphere. I think they're doing a great job as well. But they did talk about something that I feel like I kind of was circling around, but that James Corbett makes very clear on this, that I've kind of been saying in regard to the COVID emergency. But I want you to watch this for yourself and recognize how clearly this is what's going to happen and what is already happening.
And here's the story that I think ties it together in a way that paints the picture. James, what do you and I usually cover on New World Next Week, or at least we mention every single year around the 9/11 anniversary, we note ...
Well, you already said the missing trillions.
Yes, but it was note that the puppet in chief in the Oval Office signs a little thing that says the 9/11 emergency is still ongoing, right? Yeah. Every year we note that. We forgot to do that this year, but I will throw it in the show notes. Notice on the continuation of the national emergency with respect to certain terrorist attacks from September 9th, 2021, Joseph Biden.
Now, I mean, you cannot overstate the importance of this crossover. How in the world are we still pretending that we're in an emergency around this concept? I mean, even with their fear-mongering around with this whole thing, they have completely shifted to COVID-19 discussion, right? We are barely talking about foreign policy. And even when we are, we're talking about, you know, nation building now. We're talking about saving the people in Iraq and, you know, whatever. Where's you know, ISIS is kind of, you know, it's just so funny how they keep arguing. And Trump did it every year. So did Biden. So did everyone before him. We maintain the illusion of an emergency, even though we don't talk about it around the Patriot Act, around 9/11. It's the same concept. If you think this is going to end around COVID, you're not paying attention. This is the biosecurity step of the security state. We are clearly transitioning over into this biosecurity world. We just showed you Kamala Harris laying it out for you. Just like they used to have those weird little talks about the next thing and what we're going to do, terrorists and the threat. And that's what she just did. We need this and the new funding to fight the new pandemic. This is the new battle. Whitney Webb coined it. Your body is the new battlefield. This is where it's coming from. And the fact that they can just continue this all these years later and we barely even notice. Do you really think they're going to just end the COVID-19? This gives them the power that they need, or rather the safety net around what they would take regardless.
Putting his John Hancock on, because the terrorist threat continues, the national emergency declared on September 14th, 2001, and the powers and authorities adopted to deal with that emergency must continue in effect beyond September 14th, 2021.
Right. Exactly. And exactly like I told you around the COVID-19 emergency. What does it say now? Oh, that's right. It says, due to the ongoing threat or the ongoing consequences is the word they used, ongoing consequences of COVID-19, now the emergency maintains. Well, in the beginning, it was because of the threat of COVID-19. Okay. Well, if now it's because of the consequences, well, that will never end. just like this. And hey, what a shock. It's designed that way. Whether or not you think this was organic and happened on its own, or they did it, or they released it, or it's fake, or whatever, it doesn't change the fact that they're now stepping on these lies forever. 15 days becomes 2 years, becomes the rest of your life. But I'm the crazy one.
Therefore, I am continuing, in effect, for an additional year, the national emergency that would blah, blah, blah. Yep. Look, do you see what happened 20 years ago? We need a national emergency, and we need these special emergency powers to be renewed every single year. And they've got to sign it every single year, and they do. And guess what? Guess what was signed on February 24th of 2021? A letter on the continuation of the national emergency concerning the coronavirus disease 2019 pandemic. Joseph R. Biden putting his name to it. There remains a need to continue this national emergency. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to cause significant risk, blah, blah, blah. Right. It's the same thing. It's the same agenda. We've talked about it before. This is not new, but let's drill it home. Homeland security to biosecurity, and the trillions that we are now allowed to be outraged about, that we even know about, with regards to the last scam that played out. Now we can talk about that, and we can direct our ire at those companies. The one that is currently playing out, you will be censored off the face of the planet and probably thrown into a camp, and you probably deserve it, you horrible, unclean person, if you so much as raise a question about the current scamdemic. So,
great point, too. And this goes back to what he said in the beginning, where this was the article I just talked about that you guys saw in regard to, it was that RT article. Regarding, as Halliburton and basically how they got caught for cheating you and stealing your money, pretending to do things they didn't do, you know, doing faulty electric work that killed U.S. soldiers. And then once they caught them, they removed them, they fired them, they put them in jail. No, they tripled their contracts. What does that show? The government knew they did things wrong and they said, good, here's more. Right. And Corbett says that this was a good overlap to this. And I was making the same point. Right. And so that's what he's going back to, that you can today point out why Halliburton is dangerous and why the foreign policy is evil and what they're doing is stealing. But back then, you would have been an un-American terrorist for saying so. Just like today with COVID-19. Well, how dare you point out that Pfizer is robbing you or that these people would steal from you? Because that's the news, that the biosecurity state. Right. That's the point. Back then, you could point out Big Pharma. It's weird how this shifts, always making great points. Please watch the full show. Now, this brings us to a very important fact sheet or COVID cheat sheet, as I keep calling it. 30 facts you need to know about COVID-19. Really fantastic article. Now, I'm going to go through the most of this, but I want you to take the time, to go through and look at the source material. I'll look at some of it. All of it's backed up in here by source links. All of it. Every single point they make is linked to mainstream public. Like the very things that I keep doing. Pointing to The Lancet. Pointing to their information. Not because that means it's true or because you trust these outlets, but because that's what they're telling you you should be looking at. And then when they tell you that these things are false, they ignore it. So let's go through this. And you can look at this all for yourself. If you're somebody out there that says this is all fake news and you're not willing to go through and look at these links and confirm it's coming from the very people that they're telling you to listen to, then you're ignoring it. But if you go out and find an article that says why that's not true and not looking for another source material database that backs up, like if you're looking at The Lancet and scientific studies that say the risk is not what you think it is, and all you can do is find a Newsweek article that says that's not true, well, that's not the same thing. That's narrative versus scientific research. Now, you can go out and find scientific studies that challenge it and say the opposite. Now, that's fine. You will always find conflicting science. But then you have to argue that one says one and one says the other. So you don't know, and you have to continue to go forward, but that's not what's happening today. Science that backs up what they're saying is the truth, and science that counters it is debunked and fake news. Honest people can recognize this today. Now, it says almost all studies on the infection fatality ratio, or rate, they use both. Oh, excuse me, the survival rate of COVID-19 is over 99%. They admit that, which is just ridiculous when you realize how that illusion has been played, even now they're saying this now because, well, you don't know long haul because of what the higher ones, comorbidities, like all these different things, oh, asymptomatic. They flow in all these hypotheticals as if that's scientific. Almost all studies on the infection fatality rate of COVID have returned results between 0.04 and 0.5%. Now, this is all said and done. This is what I keep showing you. The infection fatality rate meta-analysis of 113 studies of all said and done, averaged out, still showed you that under 19, it was dramatically less than the flu. under, I think it was under 30 was dramatically less than the flu. But when you take that into consideration and look at the individual ages, which is why I always show you the Oxford calculator, it shows you literally, as I keep saying, that you are under 19 years old. You have one in a million chance with no comorbidities. One in a million. So when you average it out, even still, when you're concluding the over 70s with comorbidities, you find out that it's still, even those studies find it between 0.04 and 0.5%. Meaning, even at its highest argument, when you average it all out, COVID survival rate is at least 99.5%. That's incredible that you're still pretending like this means we're, and you compare this with actual other things we're told were pandemics, that's not even close to that. All they do is point to the numbers they keep saying, 600,000 deaths, but that in and of itself, at the very least, is inaccurate, as we'll show you in this discussion. But we've already proven to you is subjective. They'll tell you a PCR test in 28 days, and they'll admit that doesn't mean it's provable, but we still keep citing this number as if it's absolute fact, and then comparing that to a number over here and saying, look, it's worse than 1918. This is an illusion that's being built carefully on a house of cards that's already falling apart. Number two, there has been no unusual excess mortality. And this is a big one that I think really needs to be digested. And we already talked about this. We've talked about this back when Swiss Policy Research talked about some of this. We talked about this way in the beginning when that big study came out and said, look, yes, we're arguing there's these extra deaths, but when you break it down into age category, there's no overrepresentation of deaths in the elderly category. How do you possibly make sense of that if you're telling us most of the deaths are in the 70s and above? That shows you a manipulation of the data. We're playing games with statistics like they have been the entire time. And all they could do was attack the study and tell them they were fake news, and they got pressured to pull back. But it turned out to look for yourself. And I've already confirmed this in past shows months and months ago. The press has called 2020, and this is using UK data, both, in fact, I'll show you next. The press has called 2020 the UK's, quote, deadliest year since World War II. In the United States, they're using deadlier than the pandemic of 1918. Okay. It says, but this is misleading because it ignores the massive increase in the population since that time. Isn't it funny how that works for them? And they'll say that when they want to, but they'll ignore it when they don't. It says a more reasonable statistical measure of mortality is age standardized mortality rate. Exactly. Like that first study did. Now, when you do that, take a look at this. By this measure, 2020 isn't even the worst year for mortality since 2000. In fact, since 1943, only 9 years have been better than 2020. Okay, this is based on age. It's age standardized death rate, which is what matters because we can obviously see that when you're 80 with three comorbidities, you're way higher risk than somebody who's 19 with none. That's why you do this. You don't just average it out. We all know that. So looking at this, you can see that from 1943 back, it's dramatically, which makes sense, by the way. You go back to 1943, you had people that were living with less understanding of what kept them healthy. So it doesn't make sense, you would argue, that today, you know, unless there was some dramatic thing that would make it happen. But clearly, that's not the case. But you could look at it right there. 2020 specifically, is the orange line. The purple lines, which go from 2008 to 2020, are all lower than 2020. Before that, going from 2007 back, are the ones that are higher than 2020. Yet they're arguing that somehow this data means that we have the biggest pandemic in a century. There's no way you make sense of that. Now it says similarly in the U.S., the same breakdown, age standardization mortality rate for 2020 is only at 2004 levels. Look for yourself. 2004, right there. How is it possible that we can pretend that we're in the biggest pandemic in a century when 2000, we're higher than where we are now based on age standardization breakdown? No one will try to answer this. They'll just say that we're manipulating it when, in fact, what we're watching every single day is lying to you with data, lying to you with statistics. Now it says what increases in mortality we have seen could be attributable to non-COVID causes. And they'll reference this more in fact 7, 9, 19. Yes, and I agree with this, guys, and this is the point. And I'm not saying we can define exactly because we're honest with you. But what we do know is that there's an unlimited amount of factors here. That's not the right word to use. A lot of factors here that are subjective. Like when you combine what they claim are secondary flu and influenza or flu and pneumonia with COVID-19, and they give you that number as COVID risk, which is PIC, it's right on the CDC website. Now, sure, you could argue that all secondary, but you remember flu disappeared, magically disappeared this year. But yet flu's gone, yet somehow is able to create itself within COVID when become a secondary case, but nowhere else around anything else. Does that even make sense to anybody honest? Come on, that's crazy. But on top of that, you have a lot of other things that are happening. PCR tests with false positives, other illnesses that look just like COVID that get engaged like that because of other factors. Remember in the beginning, they even argued they didn't need a PCR test. This was on their documentation. You had the certain symptoms, you were in a high risk area. They deemed you COVID-19. Number three, COVID death counts are artificially inflated. It's a fact. Now, again, I've always said this, from to what degree you can argue, but are they inflated? 100% they are. Countries around the globe have been defining a COVID death as a death by any case, any cause, within 28 days and 30 days of a positive test. Healthcare officials from Italy, Germany, and the UK, US, Northern Ireland, and others have all admitted to this practice. Now, we've shown you this clip more than once.
The definition of people dying of COVID. So the case definition is very simplistic. It means at the time of death, it was a COVID positive diagnosis. So that means that if you were in hospice and had already been given, you know, a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death. It means that if even if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So everyone who's listed as a COVID death doesn't mean that that was the cause of the death, but they had COVID at the time of death. I hope that's helpful.
Now, just for the record, I played that for the first time on my show directly from their briefing. So there's people that try to pretend like, well, that's fake. That's not what she really said. It's, you know, that's always the way to go. Just dismiss it out of hand. This was very real, and she very much said that, and they've regretted it ever since. They've tried to scrub it from the internet and use all sorts of copies. She clearly said that, and that's not even a secret, as they pointed out. Italy, Germany, the UK, the US, Northern Ireland, they admitted this openly, and of course, they argue it's for your safety, but then alternatively argue that it's 100% accurate, and all those numbers were COVID. Well, they just told you they're not. They just told you that's not the case. Now, also here, she admitted in this where we've talked about before, they told you, and this is why they admitted that hospitalizations around children were overshot by 50% because kids were already in the hospital and then were given a COVID test with a high false positive rate and told they had COVID and they had a broken leg. And that goes down as a COVID-19 hospitalization. They've admitted to this, guys. The mainstream media has covered this. So what she's saying is you can be in hospice. So you're already in hospice, about to die from other things, old age, whatever else, and they go around and test everybody for COVID-19. Now, you could argue they got COVID, even if you want to go that direction, which I don't even know how that makes sense. Regardless, you could argue that they got COVID inside there, which is certainly possible if you believe that's what's happening. But did they die from COVID? They were already in hospice. But then you have to argue again that the PCR test could have given them a false positive. Even the CDC has admitted there's a level of false positive. So you have to admit that it can happen. So you understand with these possibilities is what all I'm saying, you can prove the number is inaccurate. Removing any distinction between dying of COVID and dying of something else after testing positive for COVID will naturally lead to overcounting of COVID deaths. British pathologist Dr. John Lee was warning of this, what he said, substantial overestimate as early as last spring. And of course, he gets dismissed, ignored, called a fake news conspiracy theorist for pointing out something we can easily prove. Other mainstream sources have reported it as well. Number four, the vast majority of COVID deaths have serious comorbidities. Now, I know a lot of you have seen most of this already, but I want to go through this, you know, quick fire. So hopefully the new people can see it. Maybe you guys can take notes. This is a good article to carry with you. Because by the way, again, remember, all of these, as you can see, are backed up by links. Every one of them. In March 2020, the Italian government published statistics showing 99.2% of their COVID deaths had at least one serious comorbidity. What? I'm just reading the chat. There's, it says these include cancer, heart disease, dementia, Alzheimer's, kidney failure, and diabetes, among others. Right. So obviously serious problems. Someone can have kidney failure in the hospital with kidney failure and still be given a COVID death rating. Over 50% of them had three or more serious pre-existing conditions. That's in Italy. We saw this in the United States as well. It says the pattern has held up in all other countries over the course of the pandemic. In October 2020, FOIA request, a Freedom of Information request to the UK's ONS revealed less than 10% of the official COVID deaths count at that time, had COVID as the sole cause of death. Now, in the United States, it was even lower. The CDC admitted that it was only 4%. 6%. It was only 6% of the total deaths had only COVID-19. That's it. 6%. It should have ended with that. 94% of all the deaths, the CDC admitted, had at least 2.5 other comorbidities. Also serious, like the ones we just listed. And here we are still. Number five, average age of COVID death is greater than the average life expectancy. What? You see the illusion beginning to appear when you put all these together? The average age of a COVID death in the UK is 82.5 years. In Italy, it's 86. Germany, 83. Switzerland, 86. Canada, 86. The US, 78. Australia, 82. Now, is there a weird correlation here? Isn't this strange? No, not really at all if you're paying attention, because it's clearly the eugenics tie to all of this has been very clear to me from the very beginning. Regardless of that, you can very obviously see that this doesn't make sense in regard to the biggest pandemic in a century if the average age of death is higher than your normal life expectancy. In almost all cases, the average age of COVID death is higher than the national life expectancy of that given location. As such, for most of the world, it says, the pandemic has had little to no impact on life expectancy, yet it's the biggest pandemic in a century. Contrast this with the Spanish flu they keep pointing to, which saw, guess what, a 28% drop in life expectancy in the U.S. over 1 year. And there's your source if you want to look into it. By the way, just so you know, every one of these arguments I've either already researched or looked into from here. Off Guardian is nailing this down. Number six, COVID mortality exactly mirrors the natural mortality curve. Similar argument, but slightly different, and you'll see why. Statistical studies from the UK and India have shown that the curve for COVID death follows the curve for expected mortality almost exactly. Swiss Policy Research did a great study on this. So if your average death life expectancy is longer than the COVID-19 average death, if your natural mortality line is almost exactly aligned with the mortality of COVID-19, could it not just not be there? Could we not just be calling other things COVID-19? I'm in my speech, which I promise I will follow up with all the stats in the video on my website. I know people want to see that. My entire speech I gave at the rally about the COVID illusion. That's what I was talking about. The possibility that this could just be literally an illusion. Entirely or in part. But you can see that if you use things like the flu or use things like I asked somebody who was just like vibrating with anger because he didn't like my speech when he came up to me and he said, "Oh, I got the COVID-19. And I said, "Well, how do you know it was not the flu or this? You know, we talk, "Oh, I got a test." And, you know, of course we get into the whole test is false positive. No, it doesn't. Well, the point is, when's the last time you had a life-threatening case of the flu? Right? I mean, I bet you literally everybody listening, there's probably like a few people who've ever had a life-threatening case of the flu. So, by the way, they tell you tens of thousands of people die from the flu every year before this ever started. Okay. So if we can point to all the pneumonia cases that die every year, all the flu cases that die every year, you know, all the ones that are disappearing today, or all the other cases, or all the bacterial pneumonia being caused by the mass, and on and on and on, jam all this together as well as lie with false positives and everything else, you could argue you could make an illusion look like this. And now we have the injection being given that's causing its own problems that are also being called COVID-19 and on and on. Now, I'm not saying I necessarily agree that that's all that's happening, but you could argue it's possible, which is why I'm always honest with you guys. I'm not afraid to dive into something they're going to call conspiracy theory because it's actually backed up by the possible fact. It's possibly backed up by the facts. COVID death followed the curve for expected mortality almost exactly. That's pretty ridiculous. The risk of death from COVID follows almost exactly your background risk of death in general. So what the Swiss policy research brought this to is that you have the same risk of catching COVID-19 and dying as you do of stepping out your front door and being hit by lightning, hit by a car, tripping over and knocking your head in the ground and dying, just randomly dying as your normal life expectancy, or just having a heart attack that day and dying. You have just as much risk. So how does that line up with what they're telling you? This is fact, guys. They just don't talk about it. Now it says, number 7, there has been a massive increase in the use of unlawful DNRs. Now here's where we get into how you also kind of bolster that illusion. DNRs are do not resuscitates. Now if you find out, which you will, that they were giving do not resuscitates at large to anybody that had COVID-19, that needs to alarm you and realize that whether they thought they were doing the right thing or not, created the illusion right out of the gate. Anybody that was told they had COVID were told do not resuscitate, given treatments like ventilators that were killing a large proportion of the people they were given to, and they're going, well, they're going to flatline. Well, we gave them DNR, don't help them. That happened. Maybe they could have been saved. Maybe the ventilator or none of that stuff, and they would have just gotten better. Well, you see what I mean. It says in the U.S., hospitals considered universal DNRs for any patient who tested positive for COVID. And whistleblowing nurses have admitted the DNR system was abused in New York. And we saw that. Elderly, remember in the beginning with the nursing homes, when you showed that something like 40% of the total death count was all in New York nursing homes, and yet we pretended like we were still in a pandemic, right? The whole time has been stuff like that. How is it possible that the majority of deaths can be in isolated single locations in New York, and we can just average it out and pretend like we're all in danger? And we now find out that they were using DNR systems, which means that they were saying, you're sick, here's a ventilator, and now if you die, we're not going to help you. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. In the UK, there was an unprecedented rise in illegal DNRs, and we covered this, for disabled people. People that had disabilities, people who had dyslexia, people who were on disability in general, people who had, I'm blanking on the other one I was trying to talk about. Anyway, the point is people that weren't necessarily had any connection to COVID-19. Right? You could have a learning disability and you were given a DNR. We've already covered this. This is not a joke. People who were in perfectly good health but were elderly were given DNRs, told that we're not going to come help you if you trip and break your hip. How does that possibly line up other than eugenics? Now, GP surgeries sent out letters to non-terminal patients, people that weren't in risk of dying, recommending that they sign do not resuscitate orders, while other doctors signed blanket DNRs for entire nursing homes. A study done by Sheffield University found over 1/3 of all suspected COVID patients had a DNR attached to their file within 24 hours of hospital admission. A third. Guys, this is incredible. A third of all what they found of suspected COVID patients. They just think they might have it, and they attach a DNR to their file. Then they put a ventilator on them, and which is, again, we're going to get to in a minute, which people like Dr. Riedel admitted early on is not helping these people. In fact, it seems like the wrong thing to do, because it is for a respiratory illness. And it was hurting people. Then they don't help them when it brings them to death. Do you realize how obvious this is? Now, I'm not saying anybody's doing this necessarily on purpose. People are following orders because that's what happens. It says blanket use of coerced or illegal DNRs DNR orders could account for any increase in mortality in 2020 and 2021. Again, that's one of the factors that you can clearly see if that could obviously create that. Now into lockdowns. Number 8, lockdowns do not prevent the spread of disease, which, you know, by the way, we've talked about this many times over, and we called this out, by the way in the beginning. Right when it started, there is little to no evidence lockdowns have any impact on limiting COVID deaths, which again, by the way, is backed up by the Wall Street Journal, who just casually admits this and says, oh, by the way, take lockdowns shown by research to increase deaths overall, but nonetheless still considered an acceptable solution. Isn't it incredible how they can just blithely, casually state what we keep yelling about and getting censored for, that they don't work, they kill people, in fact, and yet, I mean, what's going on? That's the fact, guys. It doesn't work, and yet they're still doing them right this moment. If you compare regions that locked down to regions that did not, you can see no pattern at all. It's the same difference. However, Lockdowns kill people. There's strong evidence that lockdowns through social, economic, and other public health damage are deadlier than the virus they're telling you is there. This is in regard to the virus, right? There's no effect based on comparing places that did or did not. Look at Sweden. We'll talk about that in a minute. They're just ignoring it. But on top of that, a 200% increase in child suicide. Who cares about all this stuff, right? As we talked about, Dr. David Nabarro, World Health Organization, right? I've shown you this many times. They're telling you that's not the right thing to do.
I want to say it again. We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as a primary means of control of this virus. The only time we believe a lockdown is justified is to buy you time to reorganize, regroup, rebalance your resources, protect your health workers who are exhausted. But by and large, we'd rather not do it. Just look at what's happened to the tourism industry, for example, in the Caribbean or in the Pacific, because people aren't taking their holidays. Look what's happened to smallholder farmers all over the world because their markets have got dented. Look what's happening to poverty levels. It seems that we may well have a doubling of world poverty by next year. We may well have at least a doubling of child malnutrition because children are not getting meals at school and their parents in poor families are not able to afford it. This is a terrible, ghastly global catastrophe, actually. And so we really do appeal to all world leaders. Stop using lockdown as your primary control method. Develop better systems for doing it. Work together and learn from each other. But remember, lockdowns just have one consequence that you must never, ever belittle, and that is making poor people an awful lot poorer.
Oh, yes, and he's damn right. And that's not by accident, because that is literally what's happening, and we'll get to one of those points in this discussion where we've watched that happen, and that's what he's saying. We've watched it happen. And what's crazy is, okay, well, you can't challenge the WHO, which we keep hearing, but then they'll just literally openly challenge what they're telling you to do. But we'll get censored for arguing something that, you know, this is how subjective and ridiculous this all is. A UN report from April 2020 warned of hundreds of thousands of children being killed by the economic impact of lockdowns, while tens of millions more face possible poverty and famine. But that's acceptable, though, because COVID, we're not sure about. It could be long haul. We don't know. So let's allow these children to suffer. Right there, that is catastrophically sinister, in my opinion. Unemployment, poverty, suicide, alcoholism, drug use, and other social mental health crises are spiking all over the world, while missed and delayed surgeries and screenings are going to see increased mortality from heart disease, cancer, at all in the near future. But who cares about any of that? Number 10, hospitals were never unusually overburdened. And this is an important one that's very easy to prove. The main argument used to defend lockdowns is that flattening the curve would prevent a rapid influx of cases and protect healthcare systems from collapse. But most healthcare systems were never close to collapse at all. In March 2020, it was reported that hospitals in Spain and Italy were overflowing with patients. But this happens every flu season. I've shown you this already in multiple shows. In 2017, Spanish hospitals were at 200% capacity. 2017. In 2015, saw patients sleeping in corridors, right? So if this is able to bring down the whole system, why didn't it do it then? A JAMA paper, which is one of these publications that's well respected, from March 2020, found that Italian hospitals, quote, typically run at 80 to 90% capacity in their winter months. In the UK, the NHS is regularly stretched to breaking points over the winter. A lot of UK people have pointed this out. As part of their COVID policy, the NHS announced in spring of 2020 that they would be, quote, on top of usually being over the brink every year for other reasons, that they would be, quote, reorganizing hospital capacity in new ways, you know, altering the definition, to treat COVID and non-COVID patients separately. And that, quote, as a result, hospitals were experiencing capacity pressures at lower overall occupation rates than would previously have been the case. Another self-fulfilling prophecy. So they made it so it would be even more, so it would be easier to reach that capacity at a time when they would argue that it would get there. Why? So they could argue that we're overwhelmed at an earlier point. That's my opinion, even though that happens literally every year from the flu. And they can see one of those memes that show all the way back to 2000 every year. We're overwhelmed from flu. We're overwhelmed from flu. Same thing today. Now, does that mean that we're not overwhelmed from flu? No, but it means that there's a misrepresentation of what that means. The argument that we're all going to collapse is just an argument. And every year before this, it hasn't. So how can you argue today? This means they removed thousands of beds, the NHS, to make that happen. They removed beds, and now we're pretending we're at a shortage. During an alleged deadly pandemic, they reduced the maximum occupancy of hospitals. Despite this, the NHS never felt pressure beyond their typical flu season, even though they kept arguing they're overwhelmed. And that's statistically proven, at times actually had four times more empty beds than normal. Don't forget, both the UK and the US, millions were spent on temporary emergency hospitals that were never used. And that was at the peak. And yet somehow now we're overwhelmed. Now I'm going to get to some points on a lot of these as we go forward, but I'm going to finish this first. We're going to talk about one hospital area in particular. PCR tests. The PCR tests were not designed to diagnose illness. We know this already. You know this. The Nobel Prize winning inventor of the process, Kary Mullis, never intended it to be used as a diagnostic tool and said so publicly, quote, PCR is just a process that allows you to make a whole lot of something out of something. It doesn't tell you that you are sick or that the thing that you ended up with was going to hurt you or anything like that. Very clear. I also read you the quote where he literally says this is not designed to diagnose virus. It's not the way they're using it today is simply not how this tool is meant to be used. Now, the next part is even more clear. As I've also pointed out, PCR tests have a history of being inaccurate and unreliable, especially when you understand the epidemic that wasn't from 2007 around the whooping cough, where they used this test. Thought they had an open cough epidemic for months, closed the hospital down, quarantined people, forced vaccines, then came to find out there wasn't a single case of open cough. And they even pointed to the PCR test and said that was why it happened. Right there. I've covered that story more times than I can count. Now it says the gold standard PCR tests for COVID are known. Let me see if they actually link to. Yep, they got the right article in there. That's the one I'm always pointing to. Of course, behind a paywall now. I usually show you the archive version so you can read it. But it says, gold standard PCR tests for COVID are known to produce a lot of false positive results by reacting to DNA material that is not specific to SARS-CoV-2. Multiple studies have found this is the case. And again, in 2007, they proved that is how this can be used. Excuse me. The late president of Tanzania, John Magufuli, submitted samples, goat, pawpaw, and old motor oil for PCR testing. All of them came back positive. Dr. Scoglio, PhD, live on the air, tested a kiwi for positive. All of these happened because they were using a high cycle threshold. The Australian government's own website claimed, quote, there is limited evidence available to assess the accuracy and clinical utility of available COVID-19 tests. They don't know. That's the point. We're in an emergency. Rush it through. Use it anyway. They're telling you we don't know. And a Portuguese court has ruled the PCR tests were unreliable and should not be used, but we're still doing it anyway. Number 13, this cycle threshold values of the PCR tests are too high. Kary Mullis said, the inventor of the test, quote, if you have to go more than 40 cycles, which is what most people use in this country, there is something seriously wrong with your PCR. The MIQE PCR guidelines agree, stating cycle threshold values higher than 40 are suspect because of the implied low efficacy and generally should not be reported. I mean, think about that. So you're going to a point to where you know what you're finding is not actually valid and using it anyway. Dr. Fauci himself admitted that anything over 35 is almost never culturable. What he said was not replication competent.
Evolving into a bit of a standard that if you get a cycle threshold of 35 or more, that the chances of it being replication competent are minuscule. Mm. So
that was on Virology and Today, I believe, very prominent podcast, right? So Fauci stating this in 2020, the middle of 2020, anything over 35 is not going to work, right? And everybody continue using 40 to 45, and it even states 40 in the CDC and FDA documents that I've shown you more than once. That is a choice to manipulate this to make it look like that from some level. I don't know how you can look at that any other way. Dr. Juliet Morrison, virologist at the University of California, Riverside, told the New York Times, and I've already reported most. I mean, I keep saying that. 90% of this article you guys have already seen from me. Told the New York Times, any test with a cycle threshold excuse me, above 35 is too sensitive. She says, I'm shocked that people would think that 40 cycles could represent a positive. A more reasonable cutoff would be 30 to 35. In the same article, Dr. Michael Mina of the Harvard School of Public Health said the limit should be 30. And the author goes to the point to point out that reducing the cycle threshold from 40 to 30. So he's saying to reduce the cycle threshold from what they're currently using it at to 30, just to 30, would have reduced COVID cases in some states by as much as 90%. That is crazy. And I've already reported that to you as well. So to use the test the way it's supposed to be used, he's telling you, would reduce the cases we're being told are there by 90%. That is Michael Mina of the Harvard School of Public Health. There's your illusion, guys. Very clearly. That's why we've called this the linchpin of this illusion from the very beginning, as many others have as well. 90%. Using the appropriate cycle threshold removes the illusion. The CDC's own data suggests no sample over 33 from the CDC's own documentation, guys. The link's right there. No sample over 33 could be cultured. The CDC's documentation says that, and yet the FDA and the CDC in their, specifically the FDA in their instructions for use, or I believe that was the CDC, for this cycle, or for this test specifically, say very clearly 40. I've shown it to you more than once. And yet they'll then say 33 on the public? Germany's Robert Koch Institute says nothing over 30 is likely to be infectious, and yet we're using 40 to 45. And producing the information and telling people that means these people are sick. How is that possible? This is Robert Koch Institute, the CDC. And we're conspiracy theorists. Despite this, it is known almost all the labs in the U.S. are running their tests at least 37 and sometimes as high as 45. Check the data for yourself. I've been covering this since the very beginning. Fauci said that in the middle of 2020, and I've been screaming and waving my red flag ever since. Maybe one of the medium guys will pick it up and make a big story about it. Breaking news, Blaze TV. Oh, look at this new thing I just discovered that Ryan's been yelling about for 8 months, right? The NHS standard operating procedure for PCR test rules sets the limit at 40 cycles. Guys, this is not hard to see. Do you think the NHS or Fauci or any of these people don't know that they're using 40 or above? They're telling them to. As again, they point out, based on the fact that you're, what we just discussed, the majority of PCR test results are at best questionable. And that is a very kind way to put that. Number 14, the WHO twice admitted PCR tests produce false positives. And we've told you this as well. Two times they've told you this. We've gone over their documentation where they admit this. They tell you that it's possible. Now, my point, and I keep saying this, is whether they debate on the percentage, if they're admitting there's a level of false positives, that means that at the very least, some of their positives are false. And as I keep telling you, they point to that number as an absolute 600,246 deaths. How is that possible if we know they don't care, guys? They don't care. They give you the narrative, and that's the case. Number 15, the scientific basis for COVID tests is questionable. This is a really important one that I've actually only touched on once. So it's very important to reiterate. The genome of the SARS-CoV-2 virus was supposedly sequenced by Chinese scientists in December 2019, then published on January 10th, 2020. Now, we're not going to get into me pointing this out once. I'm not referring to the isolation conversation. We've talked about that many times. This is about the Christian Drosten et al. Paper that is being used as the basis for the PCR test. If I remember correctly, I've only covered that once, but it's important. Before we get there, though, to make sure people don't miss that, because I know you're thinking those people out there that know this conversation are thinking that right there. The genome of the SARS-CoV-2 virus was supposedly sequenced by Chinese scientists on December 2019, right? That's what we're told. But we've had this conversation more than once. We've discussed this many times. We've played clips many times. We've talked about the data. We even had Andrew Kaufman back on for an interview to discuss this as well. And the one thing I want to play really quickly is just the interesting kind of caveat to that point. If I can find it. I know I have that in here. You've seen me play it a million times. Basically, it's that the Chinese CDC admits that they have not. Here it is right here. Oh, it's why I can't see it.
Why has the data not been shared?
No, they didn't isolate as a virus.
That's the issue.
No, they didn't isolate the virus. That's the issue.
So if they didn't isolate the virus, right, and you can argue they did it after that or, you know, whatever. The point is they're stating that then, which was way into this. The argument is what happened then in the beginning is not true. That's the Chinese CDC speaking with U.S. media saying that's the case. Now, they could be lying, but if they're arguing they did this, how do they do this if they didn't isolate it this far into the discussion? Anyway, that's important to remember. That speaks to the illusion as well. But this point going forward is about the next part. Less than 2 weeks later, after they claim they did that, German virologists, Christian Drosten et al., had allegedly used the genome to create assays for PCR tests. They wrote a paper, Detection of 2019 Novel Coronavirus by Real-Time PCR Test. Excuse me, yeah, by RT, Real-Time RT-PCR Test, which RT stands for real-time, which was submitted for publication on January 21st, 2020, and then accepted on January 22nd. Meaning the paper was allegedly peer-reviewed in less than 24 hours, a process that typically takes weeks. And of course, if you argue something they don't like what you're saying, it takes forever. But it says, since then, a consortium of over 40 life scientists has petitioned for the withdrawal of that paper, writing a lengthy report detailing 10 major errors. And I believe this is what drew me to talk about this. Yeah, we talked about this. Just pointing out, and I'll include this actually, that's an important one for you to read. 10 major errors in that paper's methodology. They said they've also requested the release of the journal's peer review report to prove the paper really did pass through peer review process. The journal, guess what, has yet to reply. They've yet to comply, right? So they supposedly have peer reviewed, yet nobody can see the peer review process and it's not posted anywhere. Does that sound normal? It's in fact highly unorthodox and it's nowhere you could. So they're telling you it's peer reviewed and they're using that to build all these PCR tests, yet nobody's able to actually verify or vet that peer review process. Guys, this is an illusion on an illusion on an illusion. They are building the blocks. That's why I said earlier, this is a house of cards they're building on that's already falling apart. The Corman Drosten essay are the root of every COVID PCR test in the world. If the paper is questionable, every PCR test is also questionable. That's not even including the cycle threshold. That's not even including Kerry Mulis's discussion on whether it's even used in the right context. They're telling you this might be based on something, is clearly, in my opinion, based on something that they have yet to even verify. Talk about a collapsing house of cards. Number four. Wasn't the last one? I guess it was three. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was three. Number four. Asymptomatic infection. Now, here's an interesting. Now, they, as I was saying before, they circle back and make the argument, but they say the majority of COVID infections are asymptomatic. I strongly disagree with that. But it says from as early as March 2020, studies done in Italy were suggesting that 50 to 75% of positive COVID tests had no symptoms. Another UK study from August 2020 found as much as 86% had of COVID patients experienced no symptoms. There's a reason they put them in quotes, though, and you'll see why. My opinion, those weren't COVID cases at all. Those were false positives from a test that we literally just outlined is rife with false positives. These are people being told they have COVID when they don't because they don't have symptoms. And there's no way to verify that. You know, it could be asymptomatic, except that all the studies around that topic have clearly shown that's not the case. On top of the reality that asymptomatic, specifically Fauci even said at the beginning that respiratory viruses are not spread without symptoms. Which is why the study of 10 million people found only 300 asymptomatic people. None of them were transmissible because they didn't have symptoms. But going forward, as it says, there is very little evidence supporting the alleged danger of asymptomatic transmission. Given the known flaws of the PCR tests, many asymptomatic cases were maybe false positive. So even they come back and so I'm good with that, right? They're showing you that possible caveat. I just don't like even suggesting that the majority are asymptomatic because I don't think the data backs that up. But they did circle back and make it clear that they could be all false positives. You know, the bottom line is none of this is easily defined and they love it that way. Erring on the side of you could be in danger, except then locking you down based on that hypothetical danger, even though they just suggested that it's not for sure. Ventilators. Number 18, ventilation is not a treatment for respiratory viruses. You don't say. Mechanical ventilation is not and never has been recommended treatment for respiratory infection of any kind. It's important to know right now. In the early days of the pandemic, many doctors came forward questioning the use of ventilators to treat COVID. We've shown you these doctors. German pulmonologist, expert in this regard, Dr. Thomas Voschar, chairman of Association of Pneumatological Clinical Clinics, said, got to pee, work your way through it, quote, "When we read the first studies and reports from China and Italy, we immediately asked ourselves why intubation was so common there. This contradicted our clinical experience with viral pneumonia." Right. Which, by the way, in the beginning is what they claimed they were seeing, a new pneumonia. So why do they do it then? If this goes against the usual, why did they do it from the beginning? No one can answer these questions, guys. Despite this, the WHO, the CDC, the ECDC, and the NHS all recommended COVID patients be ventilated instead of using non-invasive methods, which is what they used to do up until this moment. This was not a medical policy designed to best treat the patients, but rather to reduce the hypothetical spread of COVID. We talked about this by preventing patients from exhaling aerosol droplets. Right. So yet again, they took choice. They made choices that protected the very people whose job was to protect the people in danger. This is like a fireman running in and then taking actions that keep himself safe while letting you burn to death by saying, well I had to save myself first. Well, isn't your job to risk your life to save that person? Yeah, it is actually, right? I'm not saying your life doesn't matter. My point is, if you're in that position and you care first about your life, then you shouldn't be in that position. So here we are, where they make a choice to do something they know is not the right thing to do. They know, based on what they keep seeing, which is what Riedel spoke out about, is hurting these patients, and they do it anyway. Because they want to be safe. They want to stop this from happening. Ventilators killed people. Putting someone on a ventilator who is suffering from influenza, pneumonia, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or any other condition which restricts breathing or affects the lungs, will not alleviate any of those symptoms. In fact, it will almost certainly make it worse and will kill many of them. But yet COVID, with the exact same situation, with the same symptoms and everything, well, totally different though, somehow. Somehow different. Anybody make sense of that? Intubation tubes are a source of potential infection known as ventilator-associated pneumonia, which studies show affect up to 28% of all people on ventilators. Get that. Kills 20 to 55% of those infected. Let's break that down for a second. Here we have another example of something that leads to something that causes something that they claim is pneumonia or claim is COVID-19. Added to the list, masks can create bacterial pneumonia, which then get labeled COVID-19. We've already shown you all this, well, the 28 days in a test, or on and on and on. Here we have an example of something that's being used, which doesn't make sense with the circumstances we're being shown, even according to the experts. The chair of association, German pulmonologist, Dr. Thomas Voschar, as well as a bunch of others who've spoken up on this. They're not doing the right thing. But then they give them this thing and it causes in 30% of people almost pneumonia, which, by the way, what's that? Oh, that's right. It's being combined as PIC to be shown to you as COVID risk. So now you have an action being taken around something they haven't even proven as COVID based on a PCR test, which gives them something they also call COVID. And then increases their potential risk of death by 20 to 55%. Self-fulfilling prophecy. Mechanical ventilation is also damaging to the physical structure of the lungs. Oh, you mean the very thing they're trying to save? Resulting in ventilator-induced lung injury, which can dramatically impact quality of life and even result in death. Get this. Experts estimate 40 to 50% of ventilated patients die, regardless of their disease. Now, the point is that this is supposed to be something you do when people are in dramatic need, that they're about to die, right? The idea is that they can barely breathe for themselves. But that's not what this is. They're being told to put people on ventilators when they're awake. They induce a coma and put them on a ventilator and they never wake up. Around the world, between 66 and 86% of all COVID patients put on a ventilator have died. 66 to 86% of all these patients put on ventilators when they are told they have COVID have died. Maybe that's because they had the flu. And they're being given a ventilator, which they already agree is not the right thing to do for flu, and ends up killing 60 to 80% of them. And that happens, and doctors speak up, and they go, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, and they keep doing it as they watch it happen, and they go, well, COVID's dangerous. Well, maybe it's the actions that are dangerous. According to the undercover nurse, ventilators were being used so improperly in New York, they were destroying patients' lungs. Now, you've seen this video. She gets dismissed as a fake news conspiracy theorist, except that's being backed up by the data, guys. All the links are in here. Now, as you know, my show is typically not reading through something without backing it up with the source material. The reason I'm going through this article is because this is a compilation of pretty much everything we've already told you. 1,000 shows we've done where we've backed up all of this. And the reason the material's right here for you. Every single one of these is backed up for you to look at for yourself from articles and places where they tell you to look to. WebMD. Well, you know, these are the kind of source material that they tell you to trust. The policy was negligence at best, and potentially deliberate murder at worst. And I agree with that. Masks. Number 20, masks don't work. At least a dozen scientific studies have shown that masks do nothing to stop the spread of respiratory viruses, whether COVID-19, whether the flu, whether any number of variations. They do not have a statistically significant effect on transmission. All that matters. One meta-analysis that we talked about from CDC in 2020 of May found no reduction in either regard, either source control or protecting your grandma. There are literally too many to quote them all, as I've shown you many times, but here they list 1 through 10 of them right there. Here's the Swiss Policy Research one that I always recommend because this is a compilation. They update this every single month. Well, it looks like they haven't actually done so since July, but they typically update this pretty much every month. But this is a massive compilation, including people like the CDC, Oxford, Cochrane Review, you know, all these classic conspiracy theorist outlets like the New England Journal of Medicine, all of which point to British Medical Journal, the same points. Not just efficacy, but whether they, every aspect of this, they go through all of it backed up by scientific data. While some studies have been done claiming to show masks do work for COVID, they're all seriously flawed. I've gone through pretty much all of them myself. One relied on self-reported surveys as data. Right. Another was so badly designed, a panel of experts demanded it be withdrawn. A third was withdrawn after its predictions proved entirely incorrect. All of these you can link to and look at. Every one of these was touted by the mainstream media as the absolute and then put down the next one. Now we have the Bangladesh study I just completely dismantled as being about whether or not they're complying, and a side result was the effectiveness, and they touted that as the one study that ends the debate. It's so obvious that's not true. But they keep doing so when you have massive peer-reviewed studies, meta-analysis from the CDC that say they don't work. The WHO commissioned their own meta-analysis in The Lancet, but the study looked only at N95 masks and only in hospitals. It says for a full rundown of the bad data in that study, click there to look at it. For example, North Dakota and South Dakota had near identical case figures, despite one having a mask mandate and the other not. Yeah, there's other things that could factor into that. Always are. Correlation is not causation, but that matters. In Kansas, counties without mask mandates actually had fewer COVID cases than counties with mask mandates. And despite masks being very common in Japan, they had their worst flu outbreak in decades in 2019. These are just inconvenient facts people don't want to point to. Now, yes, there could be reasons that adds up with what they're saying, but at the very least, it needs to be looked into, and they're not. They just run with what they think the narrative is, and the science says, and data backs up because CDC says that's not true. Their data does not back it up. Masks are bad for your health. Wearing a mask for long periods, wearing the same mask more than once, and other aspects of cloth masks can be bad for your health, including increasing your risk of infection, according to the only random controlled trial about cloth masks. A long study on the detrimental effects of mask wearing was recently published by the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, which hopefully you will read for yourself and realize that it backs up everything we've been telling you about why these things are not what you should be using and their risks that they're hiding from you. Dr. James Meehan reported in August 2020 that he was seeing increases in bacterial pneumonia, fungal infections, facial rashes. That's what I have been saying from the very beginning of this. Masks are also known to contain plastic microfibers, which damage the lungs when inhaled and may be potentially carcinogenic. Children wearing masks encourages mouth breathing, which results in facial deformities. People around the world have passed out due to CO2 poisoning while wearing their masks, and some children in China have suffered sudden cardiac arrest, and a lot more than that I've shown you, proven to you. They're just dismissing this stuff. Masks are bad for the planet. Millions upon millions of disposable masks have been used per month for over a year now. They came out with reports about this in the middle of 2020. Major environmental outlets saying, guys, this is catastrophic. We need to stop now or we're never going to come back. They didn't care about that. These are the very people who are screaming about climate change and they're using 13 masks a day. It's ridiculous. Now, just on a side note, that does not mean that we're not killing the planet, to say that their discussion of carbon tax and how they're viewing climate change is inaccurate. We are destroying this planet for 1,000 different reasons. Doesn't mean that their argument is true. A report from the UN found the COVID-19 pandemic will likely result in plastic waste more than doubling in the next few years. And the vast majority of that is face masks. But who cares about that? But we got to save the planet, though. Lockdown for the planet. Well, we're destroying the planet worse than we ever have before with these masks. The report goes on to warn these masks and other medical waste will clog sewage and irrigation systems, which will have knock-on effects on public health, irrigation, agriculture. You know, these reverberating effects throughout our entire world that we're never going to associate with COVID-19, even though they're directly tied to what they're doing. Excuse me, to the government unjust actions around the guise of COVID-19. A study from the University of Swansea found, quote, heavy metals and plastic fibers were released when throwaway masks were submerged in water. These materials are toxic to both people and wildlife. Great, but put it on your face. Vaccines. 23, COVID vaccines are totally unprecedented. Before 2020, no successful vaccine against a human coronavirus had ever been developed. Since then, we have allegedly made 20 of them in 18 months. Totally makes sense, right? Something we've never succeeded in doing, suddenly just 20 in a row. 18 months, boom, 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 boom. That sounds like a plan to me. Yet, we're still vetting this one in your arms, but we already have 19 more? Yeah, that sounds right. Scientists have been trying to develop a SARS and MERS vaccine for years with little success. Some of them failed. Some of the failed SARS vaccines actually caused hypersensitivity to SARS, antibody-dependent enhancement, pathogenic priming, meaning the vaccinated people, mice, potentially get the disease more severely than people who didn't have the injection. Another attempt caused liver damage in ferrets. And now we've made 20 in 18 months. Vaccines do not confer immunity or prevent transmission. It is readily admitted that COVID vaccines do not confer immunity from infection and do not prevent you from passing the disease to others. Indeed, an article in the British Medical Journal highlighted the vaccine studies were not designed to even try and assess if the vaccines limited transmission. The vaccine manufacturers themselves, upon releasing the untested mRNA gene therapies, were quite clear their product's efficacy was based on, quote, reducing the severity of symptoms. That is it. I have made this point 100 times over. Number 25, the vaccines were rushed and have unknown long-term effects. Vaccine development is a slow, laborious process. Usually from development through testing and finally being approved for public use takes many years. The various vaccines for COVID were all developed and approved in less than a year. Obviously, there can be no long-term safety data on chemicals which are less than a year old. Pfizer even admitted this in a leaked supply contract between them and Albania. We showed you this on the show. Quote, the long-term effects and efficacy of the vaccine are not currently known, and that there may be adverse effects of the vaccine that are not currently known. I think that was played on some mainstream channels. They knew this, and yet right now they're claiming they know that it's safe and effective for the rest of your life. Further, none of the vaccines have been subject to proper trials. Many of them skipped early stage trials entirely. All these are linked to, guys, and I've shown you this myself, despite what the mainstream keeps parroting. And the late stage human trials have either not been peer reviewed, have not released their data, or will not finish until 2023, or were abandoned after severe adverse effects. This is like rolling the dice and picking the one you want. Vaccine manufacturers have been granted legal indemnity should they cause harm. You know this. The UK went even further, granting permanent legal indemnity to the government themselves if any employees thereof for any harm done when a patient is being treated with COVID-19 or suspected of COVID-19. They're completely removed from liability. Again, the leaked Albanian contract suggests that Pfizer, at least, made this indemnity part of their standard contract. There's even cases we talked about where they were forcing governments to put up their own money as collateral in case there was a problem. Sure sounds like someone that believes in their product, doesn't it? Deception and foreknowledge. I believe this is the last two right here. The EU was preparing vaccine passports at least a year before the pandemic began. I've shown you this many times. The EU documents published in 2018, the 2018 State of Vaccine Confidence, and the document called Designing and Implementing an Immunization Information System, these documents were combined in 2019 and became the Vaccination Roadmap, which I've shown you many times. Established a feasibility study on vaccine passports. Here it is. I've shown you that many times, showing you that between 21 and 2022, right where we are now, they somehow knew back in 2018 that they would be building out a vaccination card or passport. Perfect timing. It's almost like they knew, right? Well, they plan to begin and finish right now. Their final conclusion came out just months before Event 201. Now, on that note, number 28, a training exercise predicted the pandemic just weeks before it started. The World Economic Forum and Johns Hopkins University held what's called Event 201, which you all know about. The exercise was sponsored by, guess who, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Gavi and Vaccine Alliance. Isn't that funny? The groups that have the most invested in this, I mean, look what happened afterward. Number 29, since the beginning of 2020, the flu has disappeared. In the United States, since 2020 in February, influenza cases have allegedly dropped by over 98%. Right. So there, they will count secondary cases, but it doesn't exist anywhere else because that makes sense. It's not just the U.S. either. This is the point that makes no sense to me anywhere. Globally, flu has apparently almost completely disappeared. If you believe this is really happening with that data in front of you, you're crazy. I mean, the bottom line, there's no consistency around the world. There are countries that are doing no injections at all. There are countries not wearing masks. There are places all around the world that are bucking this. Sweden's doing none of it. Denmark just said, we're not doing the things you're telling us to do. And yet somehow everywhere all around the world, flu's disappeared. Flu is being called COVID-19. There's no way to misunderstand how that makes sense. If their argument is the way we're acting is treating, making it go away, yet simultaneously our lack of action is increasing COVID-19, that's ridiculous. On top of that, there are places, like I just said, that aren't doing the same things. So why has it disappeared there? How is it equal and the same and consistent all around the world if there are people doing different things in different places? Because you're being deceived from a central top-down position. Now, it says, meanwhile, a new disease called COVID, which has identical symptoms and a similar mortality rate to influenza, is apparently affecting all the people normally affected by the flu. End of story. Moving on, right? Number 30, the elite have made fortunes during the pandemic. Forbes reported that 40 new billionaires have been created fighting the coronavirus, with 9 of them being vaccine manufacturers. Isn't that just perfect? Business Insider reported that, quote, billionaires saw their net worth increase by $500 billion by just October 2020. Oh, those billionaires that saw what was happening, you know, the politicians that not billionaires, but that ended up buying stocks because they were told what was going to happen, how BlackRock had a plan designed for what's happening right now before COVID-19 started. You know, how all these things very clearly show you the outline of what they knew was going to happen. And they pretend that that's not the case because you're all crazy conspiracy theorists. If you don't see what's going on, you're choosing to ignore this stuff. Unreal. Now, I know that took a while, guys. But that was, I just can't express how important this stuff is. I really can't. Now, to quickly run through some of this stuff, I want to just make a couple more points on some of these documents. Well, I guess, let's just start with this one first, because this isn't that long. So after everything we just looked at, here is an article that's being spun around. No, vaccinated people are not just as likely to spread the coronavirus as vaccinated people, which really just the breakdown from this massive misinformation spreader. When you're vaccinated, you're less likely to be infected with coronavirus, he says. Okay, which by the way, I can't back up with their own science, but if you aren't infected, you can't spread it. That's the breakdown. That's literally the breakdown of this article. That's okay. Well, you don't get it as easy. So that means you can't spread it. Well, that's not the case though, is it? And even they make the argument in the article. It says, so let me make one thing clear. Vaccinated people are not as likely to spread the coronavirus as the unvaccinated. Just a statement. No source material? Well, that's surprising. I just went from an article that all kinds of source material. That's fake news over there. Here's the real news, and there's no source material. Isn't that funny? Well, let's keep going. Vaccinated people are not as likely, they say. Statement, fact, because I said so. Even in the United States, where more than half of the population is fully vaccinated, the unvaccinated are responsible for the overwhelming majority of transmission. They keep saying this. Now, right out of the gate, guys, let me ask you a quick question. How in the world can you, where's the metric here? How do you prove who is responsible for the overwhelming majority of transmission? Right? You can maybe argue that the majority in this location aren't vaccinated, even though that's the data they've already got caught lying about. How do you know? So let's pretend that their contact tracing is literally tracing every single person with every case right down to the moment, which is impossible. If they're not even tracing down these VAERS information, like they're not doing all this. They don't have the resources. They just don't. How do you know the majority of transmission is from the, there? This is another argument being claimed by estimations and sample numbers. They've admitted to all of this. There's no way you could actually know who's responsible for the overwhelming majority of transmission. And they're making these arguments based on things that are coming from authority figures like the CDC, like the government. Even though they were just caught lying in two different ways about breakthrough cases in total and the number they're arguing for exactly this kind of metric. Now, I'm not saying that means they're necessarily wrong. I think they're wrong. What I'm saying is you don't know this. If you're looking at this article and walking away going, well, there you go. They said so. Well, you're dumb because you're blindly taking what they say as fact without researching it for yourself in this one context. Now, let's keep going. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky cited new real-world data of the shot's effectiveness to jubilantly proclaimed that, quote, vaccinated people do not carry the virus. Remember that? That's what she said. The CDC later walked back that comment with headlines such as, quote, it's official, vaccinated people don't transmit COVID-19. And already given many people the impression that in addition to their remarkable protection against infection with the coronavirus, which I don't agree with, the shot also prevented them from passing those to others. That's not true, right? That turned out to be false. Remember this. We know that's false. They've admitted that's false. This article's admitting that's false. So right out of the gate, realize that just because the CDC states it doesn't make it true, even though that's the writing principle of everybody on the side of the article. Well, the CDC, okay. Well, they could be wrong, right? They could be lying, right? Yes, because they've been caught lying, because they've been shown to be wrong. You could say it's an accident. That's fine. But next time they state something, you can't point at it as the all-encompassing fact. But remember, an outbreak in Provincetown, Massachusetts, in which 74% of the 469 people cases were in the fully vaccinated, it forced the CDC to update its mask guidance and issue a sad and sombering warning. Vaccinated people infected with SARS-CoV-2 Delta variant can be just as contagious as unvaccinated people. Okay, that is what the CDC stated. Now, what they're arguing in the article is, well, but you don't catch it as easily. Okay, you could argue even that might even be a fair argument, except there's a lot that shows that that's not actually true or accurate. We've talked about many different points of this, and I'll come back to this in a minute, of this exact Delta variant being shown to be complete resistant to wild spike proteins. These wild spike vaccines. All of these injections right now are being based on the Wuhan original strain. That's the case. And they're telling you, whether this is true or not, that the vast majority of what we're dealing with right now is Delta. Okay, so if it's vaccine resistant, how does it make sense with their argument? Back to this. So right there, realize they're telling you that if you're infected, you could be just as contagious. And we've already proven this by all the science they put out around this, showing you that I kind of stopped saying proven this. We back this up with their science, showing you that the viral load in their nose, in fact, could be higher than the unvaccinated, right? We've shown you these. These are coming from peer-reviewed scientific studies. Their only argument here is that, well, you might just not catch it as easy. But when you do catch it, you can spread it the same. But the vaccinated will catch it far less likely. Therefore, you know, and on and on, right? But here it says, when headlines seem to imply that vaccinated individuals are as likely to contract and transmit COVID-19 as the unvaccinated, it says this framing missed one single most important factor. This is what they're trying to say. To spread it, you have to have it. And vaccinated people are far less likely to have the coronavirus, period. Well, is that true? Where's the source material? Right? You are stating something as a fact without backing it up with source material. However, I have source material that shows you that that's simply not true. If it's resistant to this vaccine, then how in the world can you argue that that's not the case? This is just one study, but I've shown you many of these. I've gone through this. I've shown you a lot of these that are pointing to different things like this one, Delta infections among vaccinated, likely contagious. Lambda, the next one showing vaccine resistance. We've gone over this already. So the real point here is that they're simply leaning on things they've already claimed as fact. The data coming out today, by the way, including things like natural immunity, challenge everything they're saying. They're ignoring these topics as if they don't exist. You cannot explain to me how people who are injected with something that is not having an effect against this vaccine are decreasing their ability to catch it. Or on top of that, if you are giving them something that's based on the Wuhan strain and you're claiming they're dealing with Delta, that also, according to this study, peer-reviewed from Journal of Infection, telling you that it increases their risk. Antibody-dependent enhancement. A potential risk. So not only does it not decrease, it actually increases their risk. If they are indeed dealing with Delta and they're using injection based on the original strain, which they are, why are they ignoring this science? I thought we were supposed to trust the science. Isn't that funny? Well, all these factors taken into account. And by the way, when I'm saying this, I'm not saying because this study means therefore I'm saying, I'm simply arguing that they're ignoring things that challenge what they're saying. That's it. Despite concern about waning immunity, yeah, who cares about that? 3 months later, it doesn't work, but who cares? We'll deal with that later. Vaccines provide the best protection against infection, they say. False. You know why I know that's false? Because their science shows you that. Here's science, one of the most highly regarded scientific publications, telling you that if you have a natural infection from the beginning, you have ultra-potent antibodies against diverse and highly transmissible SARS-CoV-2 variants. Right? So the very ones right now being shown to be resistant to the vaccine they're telling you should take, Lemu, Lambda, all of them are also being shown right now to not affect people who have natural immunity. It says the Wang et al. Identified 4 antibodies from early outbreak people who got this way back in the beginning that are potent against 23 variants, including variants of concern. There's nothing like that in the injection. On top of that, I've shown you in multiple different studies. This is one I've shown you from the very beginning. Longitudinal analysis shows durable and broad immune memory after SARS-CoV-2 infection with not just antibodies, but memory B, T cells. Ryan Cole in the beginning was talking about this, Dr. Ryan Cole, the CD8 right here. CD4, CD8 memory T cells. This is exactly the point. All of this is being shown after from the very beginning. Here's something from Nature. July 15th, 2020, SARS-CoV-2 specific T-cell immunity in cases of COVID-19 and even people that got sick with SARS from before, the cold, even uninfected controls that had none of that. Nobody wants to explain any of this. People that are not even sick, the other study showing you the majority of uninfected people. Uninfected. The majority of uninfected. So pre-existing antibodies. How is that even possible? It's because there was either something here from before or other things they were dealing with. All of this taken into consideration, the majority of uninfected people already having antibodies, right? That would last the rest of your life, according to Nature. Uninfected controls having T-cell immunity, the fact that it gives you memory B and all this stuff together against 23 different variants, including the ones they're telling you are risking your life right now. The very variants that are also right now not being stopped, they're working their way past the injections. That they're telling you with their science. They're telling you none of that matters. That right now that the injection is the best thing you can do. This is why it frustrates me, guys. This is why we get censored. I've made this point a million times, but it's not a joke. I can go on Twitter right now and say, this doesn't exist. Fake, it says COVID is an illusion. And they'll probably leave it. Because I don't really care. But if I come out and I make a real argument for why, and I show you scientific research to back it up, they censor that. They've made that point very clear. Patreon made that clear. You're allowed to kind of talk about this stuff, but you can't spread misinformation. Okay, so the moment that I spread things that back up what I'm saying, it becomes misinformation, even if it's peer-reviewed science. So here we are staring at that exact reality. They don't care about all that stuff. If someone isn't infected, they can't spread the coronavirus. It's truly that simple. I can agree with that. Except the people who are right now at these injections are being shown to not be able to do so, and in fact being shown to increase the risk afterward. Additionally, for those instances of a vaccinated person getting a breakthrough case, yes, they can be as infectious as they just admitted it. Okay, so if you remove that first, the only caveat they have, based on the research I just showed you, they're admitting exactly what I'm saying. But they are likely contagious for a shorter period of time, he says. Take note of likely. So now we're in assuming territory. I don't know why that makes sense in this article. It says they're likely contagious for a shorter period of time when compared with the unvaccinated, and they may harbor less infectious virus overall. Cool. So that now this is science? No, this is guessing. This is, well, they could be and they might be. So let's use that to argue for my side. I'm not in the game of arguing hypotheticals. I argue the data we can prove, which is exactly what they don't want you to see. Vaccinated individuals can experience breakthrough infections, they say. And when they do, they can potentially infect others. Yep. Some may also develop long COVID. Although thankfully the shots dramatically lower this risk too. You see how dumb that is? We just came from this study telling you that that doesn't make any, or the discussion, that doesn't make any sense. How do you know the long-term effects of something that's not, hasn't been around longer than a year? You don't. And then on top of that, how do you possibly know the long-term or the positive effects of reducing that when, it's crazy. They're pretending that they know the long-term effects of something of COVID and then the long-term decreasing effects of the injection on top of that. In a time where we've barely gotten past the real world effects of what we're watching in front of us. That's just dishonest. It says these reasons are exactly why in many circumstances, mitigation measures such as masking and mandates still make sense to help limit the spread for even for the vaccinated. Yep. Meaning even though you thought your life, mask, social distancing, oh, a new thing, another scare, another variant, you're right back in it forever. Now, really quickly, I want to go through a couple of these points that break this down. Now, I'm actually not going to read this again in the interest of time. We're already at 2 hours. This is the British Medical Journal. Right? This is Peter Doshi. This is the senior editor of the British Medical Journal. Understand that. Peter Doshi. British Medical Journal being, again, as I keep saying, one of the most highly regarded scientific publications. He said, as I've read more than once, in fact, back in 2020, will COVID-19 vaccines save lives? Current trials aren't designed to tell us. Factor this in with what we just read through on The Guardian, off Guardian. They aren't designed to tell us. They knew this back in 2020. So as they right now scream, this is reducing everything and disease and death and no, they don't know that. And they never were designed to find out. They're pointing to data in the world as if that shows you, but the data we keep showing you that they point to doesn't back up what they're saying. Here's Peter Doshi. It says, what will mean, it will mean exactly when a vaccine is declared effective. What will that mean? To the public, it seems fairly obvious. The primary goal of COVID vaccine is to keep people from getting very sick and dying. Peter Hotez, dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine, said, ideally, you want an antiviral vaccine to do two things. First, reduce the likelihood you will get severely ill and go to the hospital. And two, prevent the infection and therefore disease transmission. Yet, the current phase 3 trials, which is as far as they've gone, they're currently happening right now, till 2022, 23, are not actually set up to prove either. I've told you this already. None of the trials currently underway are designed to detect a reduction in any serious outcomes, such as hospitalization admissions, use of intensive care, or deaths. Nor are the vaccines being studied to determine whether they can interrupt transmission of the virus. They didn't even try. And I've said this a million times over. The senior editor of the British Medical Journal could point this out, and I'll be censored for saying this on Twitter. All on the ongoing phase 3 trials for which details have been released, laboratory confirmed infections, even with only mild symptoms, qualify as meeting the primary endpoint definition. In Pfizer and Moderna's trials, for example, people with only a cough and a positive laboratory test would bring those trials one event closer to their completion. As I've said, and even James Corbett has said many times as well, in these trials, despite their touting of 40,000 people, the final efficacy analyses are planned after just 150 to 160 events. Yes, they had 40,000 people, but they weren't all sick. They broke them down at the people that did get sick. And that even then shows you the small amount of people that ultimately get sick. And they even admit that in this article. Most people don't get sick. But we're in the biggest pandemic of a century. 150 to 160 events. That's the entirety of their basis for these studies. That is a positive indication of people that got sick, regardless of severity. Tal Zaks, who I keep citing, chief medical officer at Moderna, told the British Medical Journal, the company's trial lacks adequate statistical power to assess these outcomes. Quote, the trial is precluded from judging hospital admissions based on what is a reasonable size and duration. Okay, yet isn't it funny how they keep telling you it reduces hospitalizations and death? The same is true of its ability to save lives and prevent transmission. The trials are not designed to find out. That is directly from the CMO of Moderna. Quote, our trials will not demonstrate prevention and transmission because in order to do that, you'd have to swab people twice a week for very long periods, and that becomes operationally untenable, which he otherwise admits we weren't paid to do so. Yeah, I'm going to leave it there. It's ridiculous that this is there and it's so obvious. But going over to the next point, and pretty much finish it up in this regard. BuzzFeed News, you know, one of that great, great location for factual information. An unprecedented event in modern medicine. What happens when a state fails to flatten the COVID curve? A COVID nightmare is unfolding in Idaho, where overwhelmed hospitals are starting to ration care and medical workers feel like the public has turned on them. Ration care. What they're talking about is triage, like we're in the middle of a war. Right. Not surprising that we've been using war terminology this whole time. Well, now what they're going to do is decide, even though they keep, there's multiple locations where this is coming up. Here's discussions right here. What are crisis standards of care? They don't really mention they're going to use vaccination status to decide that, but they are, and they will. They're saying we're going to decide who gets treated first based on what we think the factors they decide. One of those, as they've already admitted, will be whether or not you're injected. So you come in and there's two people and you're far more in a situation, you know, they will choose to treat somebody maybe in a less severe situation because you're unvaccinated. But that's a different point. Let's get into this article first. She thought, now just right out of the gate, by the way, guys, this is the most ridiculous, emotionally driven, subjective article in a lot of ways. Some of it's not. Some of it, a lot of it though is, oh, she drove up and she was crying and she called her husband. I don't care about any of that. She's a nurse. So she, what she has to say matters, but we have to remember, have nurses been caught lying? Of course they have. Have doctors been caught lying? Of course they have. Have independent media personalities been caught lying? Of course they have. The point is, guys, anybody could lie to you. Anybody could be politically driven. So the idea that we're using for the most part of this article, this emotional driven idea, you know, things like this where, oh, I'm so upset and I took a picture and we're going to use that as the primary basis to drive your emotionally driven feeling about why we're overwhelmed. That's garbage. Even if it's true, you understand. I'm not trying to suggest that it doesn't matter if she's upset. What I'm saying is that has no bearing on the facts, except it does for people on the side of this argument. And also, by the way, there's people on the side, if you want to make it two sides of what I'm saying, they would do the same thing. It's always there. And I would point to them too and say they're doing the wrong thing. It says she thought about the COVID-19 patient, a man in his 40s, whose condition had deteriorated within an hour of her starting her work that night. Now, let's quickly remember all the things we just discussed. The fact that this man could have already been in there for a broken leg, for any other reason, and gotten a COVID-19 test and told he was sick, then got put on a ventilator and is starting to deteriorate, like we've seen with 60 to 80% of the people in that position. Now, where you don't get that context, do you? All you get is her emotional plea about how why this guy is deteriorating, and you're supposed to walk away thinking, well, there's a dangerous COVID case. Well, I don't see a link. There's no source material. This is a claim by a nurse. It could be true. But then on top of that, without the context of why he was there, how long he was there, what was going on, whether or not he was sick from COVID or something else or a thousand other things, or whether he was, I mean, you have to understand that stuff matters. But okay, based on her argument, he was already deteriorating within an hour. She thought about the second person with COVID who died shortly after that, as well as the other patients filling up all 14 beds in the intensive care unit, which is what we keep telling you, 15, 20 beds at max. All with the same disease, all unvaccinated, who require her attention. Okay, let's get into the other points again. All with the same disease. Now, how do we know that? Based on a PCR test with a very high false positive rate in a location I can guarantee you is using it between high 30s to 30 to 40s, because that's what all these places are using. I've already verified this. So right there, you could argue they may not even have the disease they're telling them they do have. Clearly. That's a caveat because, look, there's no source material. So you have to take at face value what they're saying, and you have to know what they're using, which there you go. Then, all unvaccinated. Okay, did they get one shot? Were they there 13 days after the second shot? Well, they would call that unvaccinated. So are they actually unvaccinated? Well, we don't get to know. We get an emotional argument from a nurse who's telling you what she already believes, who required her attention, all unvaccinated. Now, some of them could have been. Sure, I'm not arguing that's not the case. What I'm arguing is based on just her statement, we don't know for sure. And based on the data we're already looking at, the argument is that this is being stated as a fact across the board when most of it seems to be the opposite, based on a lot of different manipulative factors. Again, I'm not saying that's the case. What I'm saying is nobody could know this is the case who's just pushing this article as the proof of what they're saying. She thought of the abuse she'd received from one man's angry family members who had berated her for not treating him with ivermectin, a deworming drug falsely promoted as a cure in conspiracy circles, but that the FDA has warned against using in COVID patients. Great. I can tell you right there that one paragraph makes this entire thing open for like, if you're going to say something so wildly inaccurate, none of this should be taken at face value, which that's what most people are doing. Now, I've gone over this many times. The concept of ivermectin itself, how we've already proven to you. I mean, look, right out of the gate, guys, the fact is that the CDC currently recommends ivermectin for all Middle Eastern, Asian, North African, Latin American, and Caribbean refugees. Ivermectin. Right? So right out of the gate, I'm not making any other argument than the fact that it is currently being used on people and that that means it is efficacious. Yes, it is an anti-parasitic substance that has already been shown in a million different studies to have very clear antiviral effects, in particular in regard to COVID-19. That's, I mean, I've gone over this on the show, and even the CDC, or excuse me, let me see if I can bring it up real quick. I just talked about this on my last show. I think that's it right there. Come on, be the right one. Ah, it is the right one. Okay, so here is the NIH, right? So here's ivermectin. They're talking about this. Even the NIH points out that ivermectin is used in this exact regard. It says reports from in studies suggest that ivermectin acts by inhibiting the host important alpha beta 1 nuclear transport proteins, which are a part of the key intracellular transport process that viruses hijack to enhance infection by suppressing the host antiviral response. That's not just COVID. That's saying this works against viruses. You understand how crazy it is that the NIH can admit that science has already shown this. Not that we can prove, but that there's a very clear scientific pathway for this, that it says ivermectin docking may interfere with the attachment of SARS-CoV-2. Yet here is a fact-checking study that's calling it a deworming drug falsely promoted in cure circle, in conspiracy circles. That's what they're called. You know why they're saying deworming drug? Because they're trying to get away from that obviously absurd horse treatment, you know, that we're only using a horse paste. It's not a it's an anti-parasitical drug that's used in some cases for deworming for horses, but used for a lot of different purposes, both for, as we're currently seeing from the CDC, refugees, both from Africa and Middle East, ivermectin. And yet here they are continuing to argue this. This is pathetic that they can get away with this and act like they're proving facts. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean that everything else they said is necessary. We're going to go through and show you why those are false, but that's just crazy to me. It's right now something that is validly backed up with more efficacy data, in my opinion, than some of these experimental things they're jamming down people's throats. Just don't forget what it just said against viruses in general. Against specifically SARS-CoV-2. Oh, on top of that, that's why I showed you this. Don't forget that that Pfizer is right now making a pill that they're starting to promote alongside the injection, which is basically ivermectin, a protease inhibitor. That's what it is. That's what ivermectin's been shown to do in this regard, and that's what they've made a pill out of. And yet they're going, no, fake news, but here's a pill we made that does the same thing. Yeah, because we're totally fake news, right? Let's keep going. It says, Idaho currently has the lowest vaccination rate in the country, and the number of vaccine doses administered hasn't been climbing significantly, but infections have. Infections have, right? Okay, let's do a real quick breakdown. If you do the math on this, this is just Idaho. This comes out to a 0.03% death rate. And I thought about that. And I said, well, that's interesting. That doesn't seem very severe. That's using their number. That's their breakdown. Okay, I thought, well, that's pretty crazy. Now, I mean, that's a lot of these places have these really low numbers, like Australia in general. Their deaths have always been ridiculously low. They're just pretending that it would be worse if we didn't do what we're doing. Fine, whatever. Take that argument. Here's something that blew my mind. In the very beginning of all this, I used the this Worldometer, the data that pulls right from all their sources. And we did the breakdown on what they were telling you, the death versus cases, just on what they were showing you. And it was much higher than it looked. Guess what it is now? You take these numbers. What they're telling you, total coronavirus cases, total deaths, right? That comes out to right now 0.02%. I mean, think about that. Right this moment, their own data, which is what we keep saying about what they told you if they died. This is the world, by the way, and the total. That shows you right now, based on their data that they're admitting, that the world risk across the world right now is 0.02% of dying. 0.02%. That is dramatically lower than the flu or anything else we're talking about. That blows my mind. 0.02. Back to Idaho, though, that comes out to about 0.03, I believe. In any case, the reality is that we're arguing that we're in a situation here where we're pretending we're all in danger, but that's not backed up by the data from their very locations, okay? Infections haven't, that's cases, guys, cases. Cases based on PCR tests have continued to rise. Oh, and I was going to, in general, you can see that they're saying, okay, we've got almost 2,000 cases. Same point, the death, even at the highest spike, 55. No, yeah, yes, it's, nobody should, I mean, people dying is sad. People die every day from all sorts of things. The context matters. I don't think those 55 people should have to die, but the point is that they, that number taken in context with everything else is not that much. It's just not. Now, currently, it says 50 of the 51 COVID patients. So only 51 COVID patients are currently in the ICU. That's what they're telling you. As part of the St. Luke's health system, a chain covering southeastern Idaho, as well as eastern Oregon, northern Nevada, are unvaccinated. 50 of 51. So by the way, 51 patients in the ICU doesn't seem like a concern to me, quite honestly, especially since we're talking about acting like the hospital's overwhelmed because we're only talking about the ICU and kind of misrepresenting that. I mean, we're actually talking about treating people differently because of that one location, their one, I mean, location within the hospital, the ICU alone, being overwhelmed. And we just went over how many people are suffering because of that. But nonetheless, they're saying 50 of 51. Now, remember, just even right here, clicking on this, you can see that we're talking about St. Luke data, which when you break down, you don't get to understand the context. Were they there? How many did they get an injection? How long afterward? And so on, right? Look at it for yourself. It's just breakdown data of what they're reporting. So we're talking about 50 of 51 patients. How many of them had one shot? How many of them had two shots within and hadn't reached 14 days? How many of them had both shots and were just 30 or 3 months after getting both those shots? Right? I keep pointing this out, guys. 3 months after the last dose, you're no longer considered fully vaccinated. So we have an entire, basically it breaks down to a 3 week period, give or take, where you're considered fully vaccinated. Everybody else is considered not fully vaccinated. Do you see how this can create an obvious illusion of the only the unvaccinated in these situations when you can clearly point to why the injection is causing things being called COVID-19, the spike protein itself being able to shed, according to the Dr. Warren who discovered this, or the fact that we can clearly show the spike protein itself can cause disease, which means it can then cause symptoms, which can then spread. Or, I mean, all of this has been proven by very highly regarded scientific publications like the Salk Institute. Or Dr. Warren, who literally discovered this mRNA and said on Twitter, obviously this can shed. We're just ignoring all of this stuff. The point is that this stuff is clearly being misrepresented to some degree. And we can see that people within this 50 to 51 category, there's a lot of caveats there that they're not defining. In July, it says there were 33 patients with COVID across all the St. Luke hospitals. 33. This week, there were 289. Right. Cases. That's PCR tests with high false positives. Again, my point here is not to say that all this is guaranteed false. My point is to say that none of this can be proven. And there's 1,000 reasons why this stuff should be questioned. Like the core value. That's why I started with the Guardian's or Off Guardian's article today. I apologize. I keep saying the Guardian because they're not the Guardian. I started with that because these are foundational concepts. Like I keep saying, that's why I said that analogy in the beginning. It's a falling house of cards they're building on. They're building on sand right now. And people that are pointing to this as a debunking article are standing on that disintegrating narrative. They just don't see it. Currently, more than 2/3 of all patients in St. Luke facilities are being treated for the same virus. So we're told. Idaho is what a state looks like when it fails to flatten the curve. Okay, what about Sweden? What about Denmark? What about a lot of examples around the world that are proving that that's not true? Oh, that's right. We're not supposed to talk about them. In response to the crush of patients, which is not expected to slow anytime soon, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare last week activated crisis standards of care. That's what this is. what are crisis standards of care? I think one line here, I said, public health leaders have approved health care rationing in Idaho and Alaska and Montana. The move to ration health care comes amid a spike in the number of unvaccinated COVID patients requiring hospitalization. I mean, I always point, I'm not even bringing this up today, but like, how do you contrast this with the fact that Israel is seeing the opposite? How the a hospital director is pointing out that 90% of their patients are vaccinated. How in Scotland, they point out that most of their patients are double jabbed, or on and on and on. Now, I guess we can just ignore that, pretend it can't be true, because that's not what I'm saying, right? In the narrative of the fake news. But crisis standards of care. You know, this is the same idea. Are we really in an emergency? Even again, I keep pointing this out, and this is what's so crazy. Even in the peak of 2020 that we still haven't reached, according to their data, that still was not enough. According to the previous data the U.S. government had listed out, we were still in a category 1-2 pandemic at the most. Not concerned, not an emergency based on their metric. And yet we still act like we're even worse now. Now, by the way, the plans for this crisis standard of care that was formulated back in April 2020. To help guide them overwhelm medical workers on how to ration scarce resources. Now, it's kind of a, you know, scarcity illusion in this aspect, in this regard as well. Why? Well, because we're also firing half the nursing staff because they weren't getting injected, and then pretending like we're even more in a, that is adding to the illusion. It says each nurse, it says the crisis standards apply to all patients. Not just those with COVID-19, you understand. So anybody out there right now that they're going to apply this to, your injection status plays a factor. This is, there are already many patients who have had to delay surgeries or other treatments. And if you end up in a hospital, you may receive treatment in a waiting room or hallway. Why? Well, one, because they are acting like COVID-19 is something it's not. And two, they're firing people for not doing this. And then now they're saying, well, now you can't get a surgery. Oh, in New York, well, we can't deliver babies anymore. This is not a joke, guys. Each nurse and doctor will be taking care of more patients than usual. Why? Because they're firing people. You may have to wait much longer than normal for care. Why? Because they're firing people. You may even have to be transferred to care facility then, you know, because they're firing people. Last Thursday, the day the crisis standards were first activated, one older adult came to the hospital after she suffered a stroke. In normal times, she'd be held overnight for monitoring, but instead she was discharged that same day. That's great. This is disgusting. If things truly reach their worst in Idaho, the crisis standards guide doctor in triaging which patients receive care and which don't. They involve a complex calculation of health factors in order to save the most lives possible. And you know your injection status has already been laid out for why that matters. Well, if you don't care about your life, we don't either, is what you hear. In the event of the tie, doctors may have to resort to a lottery system. And you think that won't play a factor? Hospitals may even institute a universal do not resuscitate order for all patients who suffer cardiac arrest. And guess what? Those patients will go down as COVID deaths. Although this has not yet happened in Idaho, it would never apply to children. So we're told, until it suddenly does or whatever, right? This is how it's already gone. Now, I'm not trying to suggest that every severe cardiac arrest would be called COVID. My point is that we know if they are in there before that happens, they get a PCR test, they're told they have COVID, that goes down as a COVID death. That's what I meant. It says, Souza, the St. Luke's chief physician, said his network has already mobilized teams to assist clinicians in making, quote, very morally challenging decisions that I argue are not necessary at this moment. He's not aware of any patients who've died yet because of ration care, but he thinks it's just a matter of time. That's great. They're admitting that people are going to die based on what they're doing. I do not know the names of any such people yet, but I do believe we will know their names. As the Delta variant of the coronavirus tears through Idaho, right, the Delta variant, which, by the way, we could impossible to know, seeing as how the only way we know this, as I've already proven multiple locations from multiple locations, that the only reason they know this is because the CDC takes samples from certain locations and estimates what's going on around the country. So let's pretend that Delta's all through Idaho because they're guessing. That's not a joke. Several important differences from the December 2020 surge, they say. Patients are younger, which we keep hearing, right? But guess what? Averaging 58 years old down from 72. So not really young. Younger, 60 to 70, not much different than what we keep hearing from the beginning. They are sicker and require more medical ventilation. Ah, so now they're getting even, so you're continuing to increase the use of the thing that's increasing the deaths. They are staying in the ICU longer, maybe because you're ventilating them, and they're dying more frequently, maybe because you're ventilating them. Some 80 people have died from COVID in St. Luke's Hospital in just the past 3 weeks. you know, with the way they're pushing this, that even that doesn't sound like a gigantic number, but it's too much in general because people are dying, right? That's always the argument. Okay. They're ventilating them more often. They're elderly people with a respiratory illness, they're saying, and they're ventilating them. How, we just talked about this, and you can look at the source material that backs up why that's not the right thing to do. It's based on a triage concept at the beginning of not being able to get sick from them. Both keep doing it, though, and pretend like this is not a self-fulfilling prophecy. Medical groups in Idaho have pleaded with residents to get vaccinated, but have been met with resistance among many of the deeply conservative state. Yeah, met with otherwise known as making your own choices. But that's bad news today, right? You're not allowed to say no. That makes you a bad person. But there's a choice, though. Keep telling themselves, keep acting like it's a choice, but we'll come back tomorrow and ask you again. You don't get to say no, because how dare you? Didn't you see what we presented? But you get a choice, though. Like, isn't it just the most insulting part of this? They keep pretending like there is a choice at all. Idaho's Republican Governor Brad Little received an injection, dubbed it safe and effective, in January. But then months later, like they say in a derogatory way, like other conservative governors across the country, signed an executive order banning state officials from requiring residents to get vaccinated in order to access facilities. That's the end of the sentence. Like, they're actually arguing that like that's a bad thing. So he got the injection. He told everybody it was good. He said it was safe and effective, then signed something that said you're not going to be forced to do it. What a bad person. Like, he did everything you asked him to do except forcing people to do something they don't want, and he's a bad guy. So you can clearly see where the problem is. Not forcing people to take it. That's what they want. That's a pretty easy thing to see. Misinformation is also rampant, they say. Republicans in one county that includes Boise this month voted to appoint a fringe doctor who called vaccines fake to a regional health board. Oh, guess what? He didn't call vaccines fake. He called the COVID injections fake. And you could argue that's wrong still. But you know what? There's a huge argument to be made in there about why, one, these don't meet the definition of a vaccine. Two, I mean, I could go on forever, guys. I'm not even trying. I'm just simply saying, to say a fringe doctor who called vaccines fake, that is intentionally opaque and intentionally misinforming people. And they want you to be like, conspiracy theorists, Republicans, this is a two-party illusion argument. And at the end of the day, he got elected by his constituents, and also all you can do, so you don't believe in democracy? Oh, I guess democracy doesn't count if you don't like what they're agreeing to. Like, it's just so ridiculous how everything is completely up for grabs the moment it doesn't align with what they want it to be. The charged environment has left medical workers feeling abandoned and even resented for continuing to advocate for health measures the public no longer seems interested in. Right. So you're openly saying that we said no already, and you're upset that we keep saying no. So it's not a choice then. Got it. Quote, the good wishes from the beginning of the pandemic feel like they've all dried up, says Souza, whose 15-bed clinic in the resort town of McCall was defaced with a swastika over the weekend. Oh, God, I'm so bad for you. First of all, who's to say that even is related? I guess they just assume, which should speak to all their other assumptions. But on top of that, how about somebody indicating that you're being a Nazi by continuing to force people into this position? Right, but that's a guess too, because we don't know for sure. But let's pretend like that's what it means. You know, it's just so obvious. The bottom line is, they're not advocating, resented for continuing to advocate. No, you're resented for continuing to push people in an aggressive manner to take something they simply don't want. And then acting like if they don't, that they're not only a bad person, that they're literally killing people. But yeah, you should feel bad that we say no. This is clown world, guys. Quote, I think we all have some commonality that the public is no longer our allies. The public? Our allies? Do you not see how they're framing this? That if you don't go along with what they want you to do, you're on the other side, right? Again, exactly what we're telling you. You either say yes, or you're a problem. You understand that we're not, the people over here are arguing like, look, you do what you want. Just don't force me. And all they can do is hone in on you as the problem. There's no way to not see what's happening here. Carvalho, the Boise doctor, said she now compares medical workers to, guess what, guys, Vietnam War veterans. This is the girl right here. That's her. How offensive is that, guys? I mean, let's be real about that. Where are all the veterans out there who should flip out on this person and be like, how dare you act like what you're doing is even remotely close to what I was forced into and lied about, right? To be in a position where we were literally, I mean, that's disgusting. You have been manipulated yourself, lady, by the propaganda. Now, I'm not trying to belittle that she feels sad, if that's actually what's happening and this is not some manipulation from the whole top down. She's probably really overwhelmed by this. She's probably really upset. She probably feels like she's being attacked because that's what the media is projecting. But to actually compare yourself to a Vietnam War veteran, and the reason she does so is because, guess why? Because, where was it? I just lost it. Shoot. Right there. I'll look right past that. Because what she's saying is because they saw the public turn against them. I mean, good God. Like it's even remotely the same thing that you're watching. Because you know what happened? The propaganda is what did that. Right now, the propaganda is on your side, lady. You guys are flipping out that people don't do what they're told. I mean, it's just so crazy out of context. It says we're tired of being pointed fingers at, of being called the bad guy for trying to promote a vaccine that's life-saving. Yeah, well, that's wildly subjective, first of all. Something that's clearly 99.7% of people don't need it yet, but it's life-saving. Even if you want to call it life-saving, that's fine. But you're not just promoting this thing. You are right now acting like we're terrible people for not doing it. That makes you the problem. Even if you think that us not doing it is increasing people's risk, that's a different conversation. That's our right if we're pretending we live in a free country, if we're pretending I have bodily autonomy. Always has been. Just look at Sweden and other places that are proving to you that you're wrong. Look at Denmark, Sweden, all these places that are showing you that they do not need to do this and nothing's happening. That's why no one's talking about it. Yeah, but apparently this debunks everything though, right? Well, here's the hospital itself. Now, I want to play a quick clip for you. Oh, well, let me actually, I'm pretty sure I went. Well, let me just rattle off these last couple points before I play this. I won't play this. Just another person who is openly talking about how if you're unvaccinated, you don't get treatment and you shouldn't be asking why, right? You don't get an injection. Well, you're on your own. I'll treat the 90-year-old before you because you're a bad person. Right. While we're watching the injections not work against the thing that they're telling you you need to fight against. Right. While we're watching the data, the science backing up the fact that the injection based on the original strain against the Delta variant actually increases your risk. While they tell you that's what's happening. But who cares? Trust the science. Blah, blah, blah. Right. Well, here is a recording of when I called St. Luke's, the entire, the area they cover. And ask them a couple quick questions. Now, what's interesting to me, before this, and unfortunately not being recorded, a close family member of mine called early, this was just a week or more ago, and asked point blank the same thing, if they were overwhelmed, if the ICU bed, blah, blah, blah. You know, are the ICU beds all taken up? Are you overwhelmed? And the lady said, honey, I've seen that article too. That is completely inaccurate. Now, you don't have to take my word for that. I just want you to hear, because I know that's true. Bottom line, though, is I called today to back up what this article is saying. Now, the way they responded shows you something very strange, in my opinion. I can't say it proves that they're not overwhelmed, but you come to your own conclusion about why the media apparently can report this as absolute fact. They can say, look, it's overwhelmed. The hospitals are overwhelmed. That's what this article is saying I won't find it again. Right here. So currently it's saying the St. Luke's health system, a chain covering Southeast Idaho, is basically overwhelmed. 50-51 COVID patients, the ICU is overwhelmed. That's what they're talking about, right? Okay. So I called to ask them. And the way they responded, not only raised the, I don't know what the right term is. It made me concerned that there was some dishonesty happening. But it made it clear that they were actively hiding this information because of the politics. And do you know what that does? It creates a situation where average people who are actually trying to seek it out, not just like me trying to call, but the average person that's going, okay, well, the media says it's overwhelmed. I don't want to go in, but I'm going to call the hospital to find out. And you call them and they go, well, we're not going to tell you. So that leaves you trusting the mainstream media around what's going on instead of the hospital themselves. That's politics, guys. That's what's overwhelming everything. Take a listen to this.
This is Terry at St. Luke's. How can I help you?
Oh, hi. Thank you. Just make sure I'm in the right place. I'm just trying to get some clarification here. I'm being confronted with a lot of information that seems to suggest that you guys are just packed to the brim. So I'm trying to find out if I should go somewhere else or if I should go. I'm in Nampa. So I'm just trying to find the closest location. So if this, do you guys have open beds available? What's your current situation?
Well, the one thing is we don't turn anybody away.
So I'm just trying to find out for myself. I'm just frustrated. So do you have open ICU beds? Do you have availability? What's your situation right now?
Well, I don't know that we're supposed to be giving out that kind of information.
So right there. Now, by the way, take note of how she said we're not supposed to be giving out that, which means they've already been directed. And there was a huge pause right there. Well, we're not supposed to give that out. Okay, so it's very clear that they've been directed now because of the politicization here from both sides that they're just not telling people anymore, which is crazy. Okay, while they're also reporting it's overwhelmed, I'm supposed to just guess? Like, why don't I find out which one has locations I can go to if I'm really in a dangerous situation, even not COVID-related? My father's having a heart attack. What do I do? I don't want to rush into a hospital that I think might be overwhelmed if he's time sensitivity, which, by the way, just so you know, I did this thing ended up being like a 40-minute. I cut things out of this to make it clear, concise, but I didn't cut out context. But nonetheless, the point is that I asked questions about that stuff. I'm like, well, am I just supposed to guess? Like, that seems dangerous. They don't care from the top down. A lot of these people I spoke to are really kind. But at the hospital administration level, they're being told, do not tell people anymore while letting the media report what they want to report. Think about that. Now, she passes me off to somebody, and it's interesting how the way they describe it changed, as if they don't have the information. She clearly just said, we're not allowed to do that.
What's your situation right now?
Well, I don't know that we're supposed to be giving out that kind of information. Let me connect you over to Healthcare Navigators and see what they can do for you.
There's nothing other than politics that makes sense of that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling St. Luke's. We serve communities in Idaho and Eastern Oregon. If this is an emergency, please hang up and call 911.
Thank you for calling St. Luke's Connect. If this is a medical emergency, please hang up.
For those on the podcast, this went on for a while.
Excellent customer experience. All calls are monitored and recorded for quality purposes. Please hold, and our next available representative will assist you.
So now that's 10 minutes
all
passed.
All representatives are assisting other customers. Please continue holding or push 1 to leave a voicemail. We appreciate your patience and value you as a customer.
So just so you know, I'm here as somebody who is in an emergency situation, right? I'm calling saying, like, I need to find a bed. Like, I want to get somebody and I'm concerned what's going on. And we're like, yeah, I'm not sure I can tell you. And then, but we'll get that for you, knowing you're in a severe situation. 10 minutes go by, right? That's, I'm just so you understand the context.
Thank you for choosing St. Luke's.
15 minutes later.
Thank you for calling St. Luke's Connect. This is Stephanie. How can I help you?
Hi. I'm just trying to clarify something. I'm very frustrated by the combination of conflicting information that I'm getting from all different sources right now. I'm in Nampa, and I'm just reading stuff and telling me that you guys are completely overwhelmed, and I'm hearing different things from different people, and I'm just very frustrated. So I'm trying to find out whether or not you guys have available beds. You guys are available in general. Just can you help me out here? Because I'm just very frustrated.
Gotcha. I actually don't have any specific information about the capacity of our Nampa hospital. I'm happy to get us connected over. Our switchboard might know, but they also might be able to get in contact with the ER in general.
What? That's so strange.
Okay. Well, I mean, is this the wrong line to call? I was told this is a specific number I was given to call in general to find out. In, like, for the entire area, right? Or just, I can go outside of Nampa if that's necessary. Sorry for the noise.
Right. No, you're okay. So I won't have any information about any facilities in capacity.
Okay. No, that's fine. So okay. Can you give me the number I should call to get that information?
Yeah. Well, I don't know for sure if our switchboard is going to have that information or not.
Who normally has that information?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just confused. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm frustrated in general. So I'm not trying to frustrate with you. So we just, yeah. Where am I supposed to go to find this out?
Well, that's where I'm not sure either. So that's why I'm wanting to start with our switchboard. They may have that information directly, or they may be able to find where to get you to.
Okay. Is there a reason it's just so difficult to find out? I mean, I'm just like overwhelmed with articles and bullshit from everybody, and I'm just trying to figure this out for my, I'm sorry. I'm just really frustrated because there's so much garbage flying around right now, and I'm trying to figure out, like, so is this a reason this is hard to find out right now? You're like the third person I talked to.
Gotcha. I don't know about other departments. I just know that myself, I don't have any access to it.
Okay.
And to that information. I have a lot of other access to a lot of other things, just nothing about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess if you can transfer me to somebody who might know, I would appreciate that.
Let me put you on a brief hold. I will see if the switchboard has information, and if not, I'll have them see what we need to do. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Brief hold here.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, Ryan, are you still with me?
Yes. Hi.
Okay. Hi there. So I did speak with the switchboard. I told them what we were looking at, and they said specifically, not told. No, the ERs do not release that information.
Wow.
On purpose, because they do want people to continue going in to be seen in emergency services.
Even if they don't have beds available? Like, I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, there's such an obvious effort right now to not, like, this is crazy, guys. And she'll say that herself. Like, this is crazy. This is happening because of politics. She is unwilling to tell you whether or not they have available beds. So right now, if I'm going like, oh, my problem, my dad's having a heart attack. Do you have available beds? She's like, I can't tell you. I can't tell you. Come in and guess. And if we don't, we'll send him to another location. That's what she told me. So if I have a time-sensitive risk, I'm supposed to guess and hope you've got a bed? That is crazy. Unbelievable.
Okay, so that leaves me in the only position of not doing anything, because right now I'm looking...
The ERs do not release that information on purpose, because they do want people to continue going in to be seen in emergency circumstances.
Okay, so that leaves me in the only position of not doing anything, because right now I'm looking at articles from the main media. They're telling me that they're completely overwhelmed, and if I can't get an answer from the hospital, I'm not going to go anywhere.
What we have, the switchboard, the person I just spoke with, what they have been telling people is to go in. They will help assess. They're in the emergency room and go from there. I know that they won't answer those questions over the phone.
Man, You must understand why I'm frustrated. This can't be normal. This cannot be normal.
It's not normal.
Exactly.
No, it's not normal.
And there you are.
No, it's not normal. Thank you for admitting that, St. Luke's Hospital. This is not normal. And what you're doing is wrong. What you're doing is allowing politics to rule the day, right? So how do we possibly know that what they're reporting here is a fact? I guess BuzzFeed News gets to be the definitive source on whether or not this is the case, because the hospitals will not tell you. Do you realize that she said that even if you go in there, they won't divulge to you what's going on? This is outrageous. They are completely top-down controlling the flow of information, even around what they're reporting to you about the hospitals. So I swear to you that people are dying because of this, because people are going to hospitals that they don't know whether or not they have availability. I'm only talking about severe situations that would require an ICU bed, and they just go, oh, we don't have it. So let us now ship you off to another hospital and lose the time it took you to get here. But it's all okay. All in the agenda of the COVID all encompassing zero sum game, right? Who cares? We don't care about the child suicide. We don't care about the obesity. We don't care about the mental health. All of that doesn't matter, even though it's exponentially more than what we're dealing with. We only care about COVID today, because that's all that matters, because that's all that leads to what we want to accomplish. This is maddening, and it's disgusting. Now, a couple last notes I want to touch on here, including a couple great articles from The Defender, always doing a great job. Jerry Young points something out that I love, as he used the hashtag Johnny Come Lately. This is really interesting to me, as what he's pointing to is the New York Black Lives Matter leader only now, after all this time promising national uprising over racist vaccine mandates, And I'm just so it's infuriating. One, because they're not just racist and it's happening to everybody. So it's funny that it's like, well, now because we can find a racial motive in here, we're going to make it only about it's just like that in and of itself. How about I feel offense? What about my plight? Right? I'm just kidding. But the point is, it's so funny how it's just subjective and it only matters in their political context. They want it to. But where were you this whole time? And where's everybody else? Just the New York leader? For crying out loud, it's been quite obviously the argument from the mainstream media that's predominantly affecting the African-American community. In some cases, like 60% in these areas are all the people that haven't gotten the injection. And you're only just now speaking up? I don't buy it. There's something far more political happening here. And whether this is meant to kind of like take, I don't know. I don't know, but this is strange to me. And I just want to point out what it says. A co-founder of the Black Lives Matter group in New York warned of an uprising similar to the George Floyd protests. Interesting tie back because of the vaccine requirements. The organizer of the Black Lives Matter movement led a protest on Monday at a specific restaurant after a hostess denied entry to three Black women last week because they would not provide proof of vaccination. Right, because that's less important than the three white people the day before who had the same experience. The woman, tourist from Texas, allegedly attacked the hostess and were arrested on charges of assault and criminal mischief. Okay, so you know, I don't know why that's just funny. Anyway, 72% of Black people in the city from ages 18 to 44 are unvaccinated, Newsom said during a protest, according to the Washington Examiner. So what is going to stop the Gestapo, I mean, the NYPD, from rounding up Black people and snatching them off the train, off the bus? He says, quote, we're putting the city on notice that your mandate will not be another racist social distance practice. Now, you could argue in the context of history, it says Black people are not going to stand by or you will or see another uprising. And this is not a threat. This is a promise. She continued, the vaccination passport is not a free passport to racism. Now, that part, there's two things just to point out here. One, if let's say a militia group, I don't want to use one of the cliche ones, but just, you know, one of the ones they're claiming as a white supremacist group, one of these militia groups that, by the way, are, you know, outlined in the Constitution, the militias that we're allowed to have as our constitutional rights, but they're also white supremacist terrorist groups, according to your current government, those people, if they came out today and said there will be an uprising, that's not a threat, that's a promise, we'd be going insurrection, go over the government, just like the same kind of concept, right? But the Black Lives Matter movement comes out and that's defending against racism. All I'm pointing out is the subjective and ridiculous nature of how that works out. Not that either one is less valid or the other. And the other point is to point out the vaccination passport is not a free passport to racism. You have a fair argument there for historical consequence of situations that are the guys is something else, but there's valid racism within that. Are we going to pretend like that's not happening here? I promise you some people have been turned away because they don't like what they look like under a guise of that. Sure. Is it all of it though? Hardly. I think this is very clearly centered around whether you're vaccinated or not. Racism is a secondary factor in that, as well as a lot of other things. So it's being plucked out at a time when it's politically useful for this group and being used, which is what they've always done, by the way. In most cases, doesn't mean some people within that are not actually doing the right thing, like any other group. But it's interesting nonetheless. You can see it happening today. But it says, Black Women's March co-founder Kimberly Bernard added, we are serving notice on the mayor, on the governor, on the restaurant industry that we will not allow you to use this pandemic vaccination cards en masse as another reason to be racist and put us in prison. But go ahead and do it to those white people over there because we don't care about that because there's enough of us in there. It's funny how that always happens to be the case, but it's interesting how this is going this direction because it seems to be challenging something. At the very least, the Democrat side of the two-party illusion has been leaning into heavily before this. Now, suddenly, you've got that exact movement coming after them for what they're doing. Isn't this funny? President Joe Biden overhauled his approach to COVID-19 and announced heavy-handed restrictions and vaccine mandates covering millions of Americans earlier this month. Now, his support among Black Americans has apparently cratered since that announcement. Isn't that interesting? His decision to empower the OSHA to police COVID-19 vaccinations, which is just crazy off the rails, in thousands of workplaces is tanking him with Black voters, according to Morning Consult. It says the news seems to coincide with a protest out of New York City alleging the mayor, Bill de Blasio's own vaccine mandate, which required individuals seeking to dine indoors at restaurants having at least one dose of COVID vaccine is providing cover for racism and may itself be racist. You can't claim it's racist when it's equally applying to anybody who's unvaccinated. Like even though in certain circumstances, a large proportion may be one ethnicity or another. I made this from the beginning. I don't buy that everywhere you look, it's only the people predominantly black or, you know, it, but nonetheless, it's, I could promise you it's being used in that way to people who are racist. So it's a fair argument in some degree, no matter what. But what's interesting is how this is changing the landscape of their political argument in the two-party illusion. I find it fascinating. It's almost like their own narrative is biting them in the butt, like it's swinging back around. It's like when you people who support censorship later get censored. It's like, yeah, you almost kind of want to go, ha, ha, ha. But at the same time, you don't want to because it's also a negative thing that you don't want to support the way it's being abused politically, right? Anyway, you get the point. On that same note, before we jump to the next point and finish up here, as this points out, a civilization in crisis in one image, more kids shot in Chicago this year than killed by COVID nationwide. Not a joke. 302 children shot in Chicago. 214 children, 17 and younger, have died from COVID-19. Just, you know, I think that speaks for itself on where we really are in two different ways and how one's being ignored, the other's being overblown. Pretty clear. Now to finish off, actually, you know what I just realized? These are some great articles that I haven't really, I went over these briefly. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to read these and rehash these on my next show because there's a lot in here that are really important stuff, especially this last one. And I actually, on that note, I'm going to do a focus on this that I already did in the past that I mentioned, I discussed briefly at the Knowledge Conference. But this is from the 24th today, fear and ignorance, not the virus and unvaxxed, are the real enemies in this pandemic. And I completely agree with that. And I mean, the Off-Guardian article we just discussed does its own job on that. CDC director overrules agency's own vaccine safety committee, sides with the FDA to approve boosters for high-risk workers. We already discussed this in general. Monoclonal antibody treatment to be rolled out to the UK hospital patients with no antibody response. I'm going to go through this. There's two things I want to point out quickly before we end with the tweets I'm going to show. One is, it should show you everything that they're pushing any other treatments on top of what they keep telling you is safe and effective. If it's effective, why do we need that? Right? I mean, they're not saying sort of effective. They're not saying kind of effective. They're saying effective. Effective means effective. If it's effective, we don't need anything else. But this one's better. They say, oh, it could be better. Maybe it's okay, then it's not a completely effective then, right? It's not. And we already know that, by the way. But monoclonal antibody treatments, there's other concerns there, by the way. In a lot of different ways. As somebody just said as an expert, if you produce, not all antibody responses are created equal here. If we're producing an antibody response to something that you're not currently dealing with, like for instance, same point. If we're looking at an injection based on an original strain and you're dealing with Delta, it's causing a problem. If you inject your body with something that creates an antibody response to something else and it confronts with something else, the antibody response can hurt you. That's not my opinion. That's coming from experts we've already shown you on this show discussing this exact situation. So this could be potentially negative. Now, I've actually put aside a whole thing about this topic, this segment, that I'm going to do this in a future show, specifically monoclonal antibodies, which are seeming to come up again and again. Now, to finish off, understand that based on everything else we said, it's important to realize not only that Pfizer has been caught lying multiple times about safety, about side effects, about everything you can imagine, over $4 billion paid out in crimes. As PC points out, somebody want to explain how a Pfizer board member ended up on Joe Biden's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology? Yeah, I can explain that easily. And I can also explain how, you know, current senior advisor and board member of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is also there. And, you know, the crossover is undeniable. Or how, like, someone like Scott Gottlieb, who was previously the FBA head, is now on the Pfizer board, right? There's an overlap here that's not just an overlap, it's a bleeding together. And that's why she's there. That shouldn't be allowed. Conflict of interest, it used to be, okay, who cares? Because danger. Well, only look at this part, right? We're all in danger and we're being very safe and careful. And then the same picture in the same exact meeting. How do you explain that? This is Patrick Henningsen. What more do you know? How do you explain that? One rule for thee, not for me. This is theater being proved right there. You don't get to say, well, they were injected like they were screaming in the beginning because now the CDC says it doesn't matter. You have to wear a mask. Okay. So if they're getting together and they're getting really close, yet they're wearing masks at either before or after, it shows you that it's theater, guys. We are being manipulated. I've shown you 1,000 examples like this. And I already played this earlier. I was going to play it again, but same point. She's telling you. They know they're using examples of this that they can prove are not what they're saying they are. For your safety, though, of course. And Star points out, this is crazy to me. Her roommate, who works in a hospital, was just told by her hospital administrator that if they don't get the jab, they will not be allowed to use their paid time off while they're removed from the schedule. So you're going to force them from their job based on something that they don't want to take, which they shouldn't be forced to take, especially since they're probably not at risk. And then you're going to say you're not allowed to use what you've already earned, because then that would make it okay for you to take this time off. And we want to penalize you for not doing what we want you to do. That's what that is. That's vindictive. It says he has only taken 2 days off since this BS started and was counting on his paid time off. Criminals. Guys, that is literally illegal. I said, this is so very retaliatory and in fact, illegal. Paid time off equals, and PTO equals paid time off. These are days you have already earned, in case that's not clear. Quote, all nurses are heroes quickly became only injected nurses are heroes. How much more obvious must this get? This is disgusting. Absolutely despicable. And now, as COVID-19E4 points out, New York, the new governor, is threatening to hire foreigners to replace the workers there, the heroes they just fired, right? Nurses and doctors, they're firing because they don't get the injection. You know, the experts that were heroes that we're supposed to trust until they said, I don't want that dangerous thing. And now they're conspiracy theorists because they changed their mind, because they never agreed. Like, just like I said before, these are the very experts and heroes they keep telling you to listen to up until they didn't do what they were supposed to do. So it's the narrative and not their credentials that matter. That's very clear. But they're firing them. In some cases, 60% of the working staff. And she's going to hire foreigners to replace them. Because that's what America's all about, right? Isn't that what Americans want? Everyone's screaming about hiring foreigners to replace our jobs, right?
You said yesterday that you were looking into temporary visas for foreign workers to fill these anticipated slots that might be empty in hospitals and nursing homes. So what is that going to look like? Where are these replacement healthcare workers coming from? What's the plan?
Well, I'll start with last question, see if I remember the first one by the time I get through your probably 3.5-part question, Bernadette. This is something that we have to work with the Department of State on first. And this is a conversation we've already been having to talk about the opportunity we might have in freeing up the visa system to have some temporary workers come from places like the Philippines, where many nurses go elsewhere. I literally had this conversation with the Prime Minister of Ireland when we sat where I am right now and talked about, you know, do you have any, this, everyone I'm talking to, I'm saying, do you have any healthcare workers you can get over to us? But it is going to be a Department of State approval process that we have to work through. So this will not help in the next couple of days, but it would be great if we could, and we're going to be continuing to find ways to adjust our licensing requirements so we can have out-of-state healthcare workers.
Don't you love that? You gotta love what she just said right there, you know, so we can adjust our licensing requirements, you know, so we'll change the law so we can do what helps us in the moment. Because, you know, law and integrity and morals, you know, so they're all just tools to be used and change when we see fit. You know, it's just so crazy. Alter what we normally do. So you're firing people for an unjust reason. You're going to hire people from outside the country. You know, this is untenable. And they know that. They're desperate right now. I don't think they expected this much pushback. Now, on a final note, more positive news coming out of Florida. Florida won't force students to quarantine if they've been exposed to COVID-19. Someone in the chat just said that DeSantis apparently hired a frontline doctor. I can't confirm that, but just to include in this point, if that's true, to include in this point, I've been saying this from the very beginning. I do not trust any of these politicians. I just don't. And, you know, maybe I'm jaded. That's certainly possible. Maybe some of them are real. I don't believe it, and I'm not going to fall for it again. I've fallen far too many times in my history of being involved to fall again for anybody in this system. But that being said, I am objective and honest enough to point out that it continues to seem that DeSantis is doing the right thing. Now, is that just a means to an end for his presidential run? Maybe. I don't know. It doesn't change the fact that I can point to this and be like, good. And one after another, I keep going, well, good for him. He, you know, in the beginning, I was very suspect because he did say no vaccine passports, but then he included within the documentation that the locations could do it themselves. But then again, they guess they circle back and they pulled that. Right? They're saying, well, no, you can't do that. It's against the rules. And multiple other states followed suit. Now they're saying, well, you don't have to quarantine. Like, why is the students aren't at risk, according to the meta-analysis I keep pointing to of 113 studies on the danger. People under 20-something are at basically no risk. And so these are students. They're not at risk. The idea that you need to put them in position, this is like quarantining them for having something like the flu. It doesn't make sense. And so them doing this is actually backed up by the science, and doing so is a smart move and it makes sense. And so I'm happy about that. See what I mean? So even though I'm still going like, dang, I don't believe it, and I think this is dangerous, that I still am willing to point out that these are good moves. And as well as point out that maybe he is doing the right thing for the right reasons. I just don't know. But I will never be trusting these people again for the rest of my life. But we need to see that there are some good things happening, and whether he's doing it for the wrong reasons, these should be supported. And we need to show everybody else things like Sweden and situations like that and say, look at what's going on over there. Look at the reality and the contrast to what we're seeing. It's not possible that we could be staring at a position that is challenging every single metric they tell you you must abide by or we're all going to die. I don't know why it's falling on me. And they're not doing it. And they're not dying and act like there's just no, here's what I keep saying. They're not pointing in the beginning. They tried to play this game where they go, well, here's the explanation for Sweden. And they very quickly stopped doing that because they were embarrassed. It's obvious. They're not doing the mandates. They're not forcing people to wear masks. They're not forcing distance. They're not really doing anything forcefully. They're offering things. And yeah, they're saying we do have cases and here's something. Some people are taking injections, but if they're dealing with the same thing, dramatically uninjected, they're not forcing this. They're not mad. They should be rip-roaring with Delta and COVID-19 based on everything they're telling us, and they're just not. And you contrast that with places like Israel or Malta or Gibraltar or Scotland or any of the number of ones we've shown you that did reach things from before. Malta being an obvious example, showing you that, and Israel being one of the most, that we reached what they claimed was herd immunity way back in March before we were told this was all happening, and they still are dealing worse now than most other places. It's because of the injection, guys. It's backed up by all the data, and all they can continue to do is show you emotionally driven, subjective arguments about superficial things that people are looking at, as opposed to the scientific data that we keep putting in front of you that shows you what we're saying. And again, I'm not even saying that that means that I'm right. It means that what they're showing you is not absolutely verified, and you should have a right to say no. That's it. It's amazing that that's contentious today. You should have a right, a choice. Oh, you dangerous terrorist in the country of the free. Sure lines up, doesn't it? Thank you for being here today, guys. I appreciate your time. Another 3-hour show. I actually am glad I didn't say it was going to be short. I thought that was going to be the case today. But thank you for being here and continuing to share the information. It's just really, I can't get past how important what we're doing is today, what you're doing is today. It really is one of the most important things I think we've ever been involved in. And it's not just about COVID-19. It's about what's trying to be driven in because of COVID-19. So keep fighting. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right to freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country have we been told that you can't go to church because it's not essential, but you can go get an abortion because that's essential? Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We cut off people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about that. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself.
Stop, man, this shit ain't right, bro.
But what's happening now as unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look, he ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing, look.
We the people want to put our government back in its place. We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours was pulled under
all
your nose.
Is a note that says
I don't
can't
have to bring a note, and yours isn't even on.
You just do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen, get out.
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.